back here. He's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The
billiard? Not billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. Come on. We call it the
place to be.
The place to be, yes. It's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can...
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Priscolo.
Teach me how to judge.
All my bitches love me. All my bitches love me. All my bitches love me. You ain't fucking with my judge. That name is John.
For them dudes who don't know. Place to Be Nation, welcome to another tremendous episode of the Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero. And with me, as always, is the man who is doing the Dougie all weekend long. That is my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, Mr. Rosero. And good evening, everyone, to episode 52.
Yes.
Craig Pepper Johnson. Along. Pepper Johnson.
Mo Lewis.
You mean Ray Lewis?
No.
Oh, yeah, no, Mo Lewis was 52. You're quite right. That's right. No, you're right.
Yeah, screw
Both
Ray
Lewises
Lewis.
Were. Screw Ray Both Lewises were.
Mo Lewis is where it's at.
Yes.
So
number 52.
Yep, thrilling episode. We've been kind of pumped about this one all weekend long.
Mm.
We've kind of been getting all revved up for it. Of course, if we have some time after the show, we'll get into some of the Matt Rotella festivities. If not, we'll get to it probably next week. So
I find it funny that you just said we were poring over these lists this weekend in between our serenading, dancing, drinking, and God knows what else we filled in this weekend. But
yes,
no our
sleep,
man is
though. That was not fitting.
No, sleep was at a minimum. You and I pretty much were like walking dead by about midnight on Saturday.
Yeah.
So, but it was a great time, and our man is officially Mr. I'm not going to say her last name. I'll give her permission. But, yeah, they are officially on the high seas and for their honeymoon. And we'll talk to him. He'll be back on in a few weeks. And
yeah, we'll wrap everything up with that. Yeah. But it did go well. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
A lot of drinks.
A lot of drinks. So. And I just – the one thing that our friends at work, at my work, that went to the event and that weren't there that know Matt, the whole Casey and JoJo moment just was the highlight of just – absolute hilarity. Look, you look like friggin' Fabio. It's just terrible.
He worked it.
I give him a lot of credit. He didn't care. He let himself out there for everyone to see. So it was fun. It was a good time. But we'll get into that. We'll give it the time it deserves in a few weeks. But tonight, on episode 52 of the Place to Be podcast, of course, this is 6 days away from SummerSlam 2011. So tonight, we will turn back the clock. No, this is not a vintage vault. We will turn back the clock because tonight, from the one you thought you'd never see to my favorite, we will feel the heat.
It's summertime and the living's anything but easy.
We heard last time.
Yes, exactly.
From nuptials to napalm.
Hell!
Of course, that song only means one thing. It's time once again for our second Listomania, the first one we busted out back in March for WrestleMania, where we basically go through a bunch of different categories and topics and rank all the different entries, and we compare them and debate them. And then we ask you, our fans, the PTB Nation, to go ahead and do the same over on the Facebook page, and we'll... debate those on there as well. So, how many categories we have total here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven categories.
4, 5, 6. Yes, 7 categories. We are going to grade one that will not have ranking. We each chose our top 10 all time. No, not top 10. Our 10 all time SummerSlam performers.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't rank those. I ranked them, but we don't have to do that part. We'll just give our 10.
Okay.
We will rank the venues, and obviously there were repeats. In fact, 1, 2, 3 arenas have had more than one SummerSlam. We will rank the openers, which will be the first one we do. We will also rank, obviously, the shows, the tag title matches, which there aren't many, the intercontinental title matches, which many people consider might actually be the backbone of SummerSlam. Some of the best of all time Intercontinental title matches have come from SummerSlam. And, of course, the main events. And that's a tricky one. And we'll explain – not tricky, but we'll explain – there's more matches than shows. And we'll explain that when we get to that list.
Yes. So, as you mentioned, I think we should go ahead and get things rolling because we got a lot to talk about tonight. And let's start with the all-time SummerSlam openers. So what we do is we start in reverse order. Mm-hmm. So I'll go ahead and kick this one off, and we'll work backwards. So what we did last time was I said mine, you said yours, then me, then you. Yeah, so we go like that. So
okay, now I've already realized I already did something wrong here. I think I'm short one. There's 23 SummerSlams.
That's what I have. I have
23. All right, I only have 22 openers, so there might be an opener that I missed. I'll have to keep track of it because I only have 22 openers. I have to take a look. This will be a lot tighter. A lot of people loved our WrestleMania Listomania. You and I kind of thought we went a little too long, but you know, we had more topics and it was a lot more to discuss. This one we're going to try and be as tight as we possibly can, and keep everything in a nice tight package for you. So
that's what she said. So let's get things going. With number 23 on my all-time SummerSlam opener list. No surprise here, obviously, it's Chris Benoit and Orlando Jordan from 2005.
Yes. That's actually the one I have as well.
Okay.
It was 25 seconds. If you could mark out on it because everyone was annoyed, of course, Orlando Jordan, even being Intercontinental Champion, and then
he had Wolverine. He had won the year before.
Yes, and he actually won it the month.
Not the year before. I meant the month before. Yeah,
the month before.
He beat some. I'm all over the place. He beat Benoit at the Great American Bash the month before, pissing off a lot of people. So everyone loved seeing Benoit destroy him in 25 seconds there.
Yes, and that absolutely is what happened. So, but again, 25 seconds, really not much to go on, and that's pretty much that. So that was my number 23.
All right.
So I agree with you.
My number 22 occurred last year, and that is Kofi Kingston and Dolph Ziggler for the Intercontinental title. With no contest in 7 minutes, because that's when they're doing the whole Nexus thing where they kept interfering in all the matches to kind of push their heat along. So 7 minutes in, they came in and wiped both guys out. So this is a match that probably could have been good, given the chemistry between those two guys that we've seen over the last year. But unfortunately, they didn't really have much of a chance on this night.
Yep. My number 22 is actually – I have that a little higher because I actually didn't mind the match, believe it or not. My number 22 is the – opener for SummerSlam 1990, which pitted Paul Roma and Hercules, of course, Power and Glory, taking on the Rockers. You and I talked about this match on the Vintage Vault. It was a kind of a mess. Sean was hurt, so it was kind of herky-jerky and never really got going. A match that probably had a lot of potential ended up being a dud. So that's what I have there. It's the opener from SummerSlam 1990 between Power and Glory and the Rockers.
All right, well, that's definitely our first disparity, because I have that much higher, as we'll see.
Oh, okay.
All right, so next up here is number 21, and that, for me, is the opener to SummerSlam, so I'll make sure I get the right year, SummerSlam 2007, and that is Kane and Finlay. Kind of an odd match. I believe they had a little bit of a feud going, but really not much to it. Just what you'd expect between those two guys. It was actually an odd choice for an opener, I thought. But they go eight and a half minutes. Hornswoggle gets involved, and Kane would win the match with a chokeslam. So, Finlay, that was kind of the tail end of his push, but still an odd choice for an opener for SummerSlam. And that was kind of a, as we'll get to later, maybe more of a down SummerSlam.
Yeah, my next one at number 21. Is the opener from SummerSlam 2007, which pitted? I just want to pan down a bit here. Yes, Kane and Finlay. Yes, I was confirming another number. Kane and Finlay. Yeah, kind of herky jerky. Hornswoggle ran in. Kane was selling an injury. I mean, it was nothing fancy. It was a decent opener, but nothing earth shattering.
All right. So for number 20, I have the opener from the next year. And that is MVP and Jeff Hardy. Shelton Benjamin was on the floor outside. He got involved. MVP actually won clean. This was, I believe, this was after his whole losing streak, right? I think this was kind of coming right off of that. Or was it before it? I'm not sure. I can't. These last few years will blend together so much for me.
Yeah, I know. I honestly am drawing a blank as well.
I remember it being a pretty good match, but nothing spectacular. Solid work between two guys that always put on solid matches.
Yes. My next match at number 20 is the opener from SummerSlam 2003, which pits. I just need to pan my. I apologize. My internet's a little shaky tonight. I'm trying to find the get the page here. I just wrote the years down because the file was getting kind of big. But the opener from SummerSlam 2003, which was La Resistance, Sylvain Grenier and René Dupri taking on the Dudleys. I was so bored of this feud by then. I just looking at the match just makes me sick. I just like the Dudleys bored the crap out of me throughout most of 2003, and this match to me was the encapsulation of it. And I really didn't even have a problem with La Rez. Like, my brother and I always argue about it because he hates them, but I thought I had no problem. They were good heat magnets, but this match just drives me crazy. So I have that one at number 20.
All right, well, that checked in at 19 for me, so.
Okay.
Same thing. The match itself, actually, the crowd is pretty hot for this match, surprisingly enough, because as you said, the feud was kind of getting a little blah at that point. The Dudleys were really kind of getting played out as well. Rob Conway makes his debut as the, rips off the cameraman or whatever, and rips off the outfit to show that he was the cameraman. He was the French sympathizer, whatever they kept calling him, in the build up there.
Exactly.
So I was kind of upset. I think a lot of people thought the Dudleys were going to win the titles at that show. So that feud would carry on for another month. But the La Rez over at the Dudley SummerSlam 2003 is my 19th ranked opener.
Okay, my number 19 opener. You might, don't get upset. I know he's your guy, but my number 19 opener is from SummerSlam 1994, which was IRS and Bam Bam Bigelow against the Head Shrinkers. Short, nondescript, ended in a DQ. I don't know. I felt like Bigelow deserved better. But it could have been a better match. And sad thing is, all four good workers. Just the match to me always felt kind of flat. My number 19 match is my number 19 all-time SummerSlam opener is from 1994, the Head Shrinkers against Bigelow and IRS.
Okay, I have that just a little skosh higher. So
okay,
my number 18 is from SummerSlam 98, and that's D'Lo Brown versus SummerSlam 99, D'Lo Brown versus Jeff Jarrett. Both titles were on the line in this match. Jarrett won to unify them. I remember liking the match, but just it's another one that was just kind of nondescript, just kind of there. Like a lot of mid-card matches in this time. Mark Henry came out, turned heel on his buddy D'Lo. They had obviously been having the whole thing with D'Lo criticizing Mark Henry's weight in the weeks leading up to it. D'Lo actually had both belts, so they were already unified, but Jarrett won them both from him. And then the next night, of course, he'd give Mark Henry the European title as a gift for helping him. So that is my 18th match.
Okay, my 18th match is the opener from SummerSlam 2009, which is a match you talked about the same guy earlier on in the match from the following year. But this is for the Intercontinental Championship, Rey Mysterio and Dolph Ziggler. Actually, not a terrible match, but it could have been a lot better. I was anticipating more, maybe because I thought Ray would kind of carry Dolph to a better match than he kind of did. So
more disparity. I have that much higher.
I get upset at this match because I think it could have been a lot better. So the later matches, the match in the later 2000s, probably because we haven't really reviewed them. To me, all kind of seem like a little very similar, but I do I wish I could like that match better than I do. And you know what? When we get to that review, I may actually probably grade it higher. But for now, it's good, but it could be a lot better for me.
Okay. Number 17, so. I have the opener of SummerSlam 2000. That is Rikishi and Too Cool battling the Right to Censor, Stevie Richards, Good Father, and Bill Buchanan. Maybe we'll talk to Stevie about this when we talk to him on Monday. Mm. This one was, all about crowd heat. Rikishi and Too Cool was still very over. This is about a month, actually, before Rikishi returned heel, even, so... kind of on his last legs, but still the crowd was quite behind him. RTC was getting a lot of heat at this point as well. So, a good opener for that kind of show, but in the scope of openers, I don't think it was that great.
Yeah. My number, 17 is a match you already mentioned. I think I like it a little more than you do, probably because I kind of liked his character at the time. And that is Jeff Jarrett and D'Lo Brown from SummerSlam 99. Mm-hmm. I loved Jarrett's gimmick. Of being the wife-hating or a woman-hating asshole.
Yep.
I don't know, redneck prick. I don't know. I kind of dug it.
Well, I don't think had that really. I guess it had started a little bit.
Yeah, no, it had. Yeah, no, it was getting there.
Okay.
But it was still. It still was pretty harsh. And you remember, you got to give Jarrett a lot of credit because he probably at least within the company, took Owen Hart's death worse than anybody.
Yeah.
Because they were tag partners. So I give him a lot of credit for rebounding through the summertime and actually putting on a really good character. So I always have a soft spot for this match. It's probably not as good as I'm thinking it is, but I've always liked it. So that's why I have it a little bit higher than you. And I have it at number 17 of SummerSlam openers.
All right. Number 16 is a match you talked about, and that's from 1994, the Headshrinkers against Bigelow and IRS. This match would have had a little bit more juice, but it kind of got stripped from it when Shawn Michaels and Diesel beat the Headshrinkers on a house show a few days before to win the tag titles. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden this became a non-title match. This is just as the corporation was starting, so it wasn't really established as like the loser group that it would become in 1995. It still was kind of a pretty solid unit at this point. DiBiase was clearly being set up as like the main heel manager, so...
Right.
I don't know, I always liked this match. I thought all four guys worked pretty hard. I liked the idea of the Bigelow and IRS team. Headshrinkers were in the groove in 94, definitely their best year as a team. Yeah, it has the weak DQ when Alpha comes in and starts assaulting Bigelow and IRS, but as far as like getting the show going, I always enjoyed that match.
Okay. My number 16 opener is one you've already mentioned, and I actually kind of like it. Maybe because I was a big mark for the Nexus stretch, but I have the Dolph Ziggler Kofi Kingston match from SummerSlam last year.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the match. I thought maybe it could have built to more, but you know, maybe I was blind to like the Nexus thing and the run in kind of.
Well, Nexus was definitely still hot at that point. It wasn't until later in that night where they were really kind of killed off. But
yeah, exactly. But and I liked the match. You know. Dolph and Kofi had good chemistry together by this point. I thought it was a good match. Again, I know you and I are not fans of no contests, but because I was a mark for the Nexus, it didn't bother me. So okay. I have that one at number 16.
All right, my number 15 is 2000 and let me double check. I think it's 2006. Is Rey Mysterio and Chavo Guerrero?
Yes.
Okay, from 2006, yep. And that was Chavo's first match coming back after he. Had the layoff after the whole Curran White thing and after Eddie's passing, and he did the retirement angle, and then he came back and turned on Ray.
Yep.
Vicky came out, got involved, and accidentally cost Ray the match. A good match, not as good as their best, which are really good when they're at their peak. And even they'd have a couple better matches that year as well. So, of course, maybe their best one was it Bash 04, I think, when they fought? That was a really good match. They had 20 minutes for the Cruiserweight title.
Yes, it was Bash 04, yep.
You know, I liked this one. It got the crowd going. It got the show going. Both guys worked hard, and obviously they had the chemistry there. But it was just lacking a little bit of something for me to move up any further on my list.
Okay. Incidentally, I have Ron in the background, as we normally do for our Monday shows, and your guy there, Toad Boy, shaved his little soul patch.
Yep.
So I wonder if they told him backstage he had to shave it. My number 15 match is the opener from SummerSlam 1993, which is Razor Ramon against Ted DiBiase. It's a historical match because it is the last one in ring for the Million Dollar Man, and obviously it was Razor's first official match as a big-time babyface. And I always thought the crowd was hot, and, you know, it was a serviceable match. I liked the build, of course. That was the whole, you know, Razor losing to 1-2-3 Kid on Raw and DiBiase ripping him and saying he could, you know, mow his lawn or do his dishes or whatever the heck it was and wash his car. And, I just like the build, and I like the drama behind it. So I've always had a soft spot. The match itself, I know, is not that great, but I don't know, I like it. I always had a soft spot for it. I think it's a good way to get the show started. Razor, big time baby face, and it was one of those matches where you know you're testing a new character in front of the audience, and a big year for them, a big summer after what happened in the spring, and won't get into that now. And I thought it was a good move for them to have him in the opener, and kind of get the crowd hot. So I've always had a soft spot for that match. So that's my. That's my number 15 match, the number 15 opener, Razor and DiBiase from 1993.
All right. Number 14 is a little hidden JR classic I like from 2004, the Dudley Boys, Bubba, Devon, and Spike against Rey Mysterio, Kidman, and London. I really like this opener. The tag titles were not on the line, but they were being held, I think at this point, still by Kidman and London. This was during Spike's boss period where he was the crazy little bastard boss brother, you know, ruling his brother, telling him what to do and where to go. And he was just great in that role. I loved that role. And I love the dichotomy here. You have the big, you know, bruising Dudleys against the high-flying faces. Ray was you know, in his WWE prime groove before his resurgence recently. 2004, he was really, really cooking. And Kidman and London, I love that team throughout that whole year. I thought they had really good chemistry even into their feud. So I just like this match. This is, to me, is a vintage classic WCW-style cruiserweight opener type match, and I really dug it.
Well, I like it a lot because I have it even higher.
Okay.
My number 14 match is actually one that you obviously – I don't think you've mentioned it yet. And that is the opener from SummerSlam 2008, which was MVP and Jeff Hardy.
Yep, that was my 2020.
I had a feeling you mentioned it. I like it a lot. I love the feud. It was a great – it was the backbone of the mid-card on SmackDown that year. And, you know, the when they were tag champions and MVP was kind of a smarmy bastard and – and, you know, it was, in my opinion, it was one of Matt's best runs post Edge. So I've always had a soft spot for it. And, you know, it was a good opener. And, MVP was on a good roll. So, so I like that one. So that's my number 14, match is, Jeff Hardy and MVP from SummerSlam 2008.
All right, well, we're almost halfway there. Why don't we switch it up and let you start going first, and we'll mix it up a little bit.
Sure, no problem. At number 13 on my list is the opener from Summers, the inaugural opener, the actual official very first ever SummerSlam match, and that is the British Bulldogs and the Rougeaus from SummerSlam 1988. It's a pretty stiff fest because we know the backstory that both guys, you know, we documented it on the Vintage Vault episode where, you know, Jacques sucker punched Dynamite in the face, which was pretty dumb. And, you know, there's a lot of obviously suspense and tension going in. But I thought it was a good match. It was a time limit draw probably because I didn't want one team to job to the other or else Dynamite would have probably snapped. But I always liked it. You know, good.
Kind of surprised, actually. I thought you'd have that higher. I know how much you do like that match.
I do like that match, but there's other openers for me that I like more. Okay. But I do have a soft spot for it, but I couldn't really justify putting it that much higher. But I do like it. So that's my number 13 match, the 13 SummerSlam opener, and that is the British Bulldogs and the Rougeaus from 1988.
All right, for my 13th match is from one of your favorite shows, SummerSlam 1998, and that's D'Lo Brown and Val Venus for the European title. D'Lo was doing the whole torn pec thing. He had the chest protector on.
Yep.
Val was just really – he had only debuted in May, so he was, you know, starting to kind of hit his groove here as well. These two worked well together for being two young guys, and to me this was always one of those matches that, you know, when you look at the change, the bridge year of 1998 kind of edging into the full-on Attitude Era – to me, that's the match that always kind of symbolized it. These two young guys going out there, and this is what they were always preaching over WCW, was their youth and athleticism.
Yep.
And giving two guys like this the opener on such a big show in MSG showed a lot of faith, and I thought they delivered a good match. Of course, D'Lo would win by DQ because did Val hit the ref or something? Wasn't it something? Oh no, he.
It was
kind of a weird ending though, right?
Yeah, it was a strange ending, and then he did the splash. He did the money shot at the end.
Val knocked the ref down.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and then he did the money splash, the money shot rather onto the ref, didn't he? Or did he do it onto D'Lo?
No, you know what it was? He put
D'Lo's
protector on, and then he did the money shot.
Yeah,
and the ref disqualified him for a foreign object. That's what it was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I thought that was after the match.
No, I thought that was before the match. We'll have to double check that.
Okay.
I thought that's how it ended. Anyway, it was a DQ and involved the money shot, and D'Lo kept the European title. But it was I agree with you. It's a tremendous opener. Obviously, I haven't had it on my list yet, so you know that I have it higher. At number 12 on my list is a match we just talked about last week, and that is the opener from SummerSlam 1991. Well, you would have appreciated the real opener, which was the dark match, which was Kato against Coco Beware. I know you have that number one, but the actual opener of that show is, of course, the six-man tag we talked about on last week's.
No, what happened was the ref accidentally – I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the ref accidentally
– let's clear this up.
Val was going for the money shot, and the ref accidentally crotched him on the rope. I don't know if he bumped into the rope or something.
Oh, okay.
So then D'Lo survived the match. Val jumped down and hit the ref and got DQ'd. But I'm pretty sure he hits the money shot on the ref with the chest protector on. I don't think he hits it on D'Lo. I think they let D'Lo get out unscathed.
Yeah. Okay, good. I'm glad we cleared that up because that ending does get very, very herky-jerky. But anyway, at number 12 on my list of the greatest SummerSlam openers of all time is one we just discussed on last week's Vintage Vault, and that was from SummerSlam 1991, the six-man tag of the British Bulldog, Ricky Steamboat, the Dragon, and the Texas Tornado against Power and Glory and the Warlord. I won't get into too much of it. We just talked about it last week, but it's a favorite of mine, so I have it at number 12.
All right, my number 12 is a match you talked about a little bit earlier. That's from 1993, Razor Ramon and Ted DiBiase. Razor's big first match as a face, in a role he'd really become synonymous with. DiBiase's last match in a U.S. ring, right? I don't think he ever wrestled again in the United States. He went to Japan for a little bit, and then he had to retire due to the back injury. So on his way out the door, he put Razor over, and then he'd be gone until 1994 dawned. So
yes.
Good, always another solid SummerSlam opener. That's what a lot of these are, and that was definitely epitome of that definition. So,
right. All right. At number 11 on my list. Number 11 on my list of the greatest SummerSlam.
I've been watching you for as long as I can remember. You're all a real man can need and never ask for. This is love, girl. This is more than a crush. Yeah.
And that is, of course, the opener from SummerSlam 1992 at Wembley. The LOD, the Legion of Doom, against Money Inc. Even though they had won the titles the year before, they're both very happy and very proud of this match. It says it on their DVD. Although I have to admit, I like the match itself, but I got very upset when they brought in Rocco the Puppet to destroy the bond that I had. He tried to worm his way in, that termite-infested Jezebel Rocco. But in any event, it is my number 11 favorite SummerSlam opener of all time, the LOD. L-O-V-E of the L-O-D against, that was good, huh? Against Money Inc. That's my number 11.
All right, that's actually my number 11 as well. You know, that match always kind of confounds me. I like it. It's good. It's solid. But the way, like, Animal talks about it on the DVD and has said multiple times it's his favorite match with them as a team is kind of surprising. Maybe
I agree.
It has to do with the atmosphere and maybe knowing it was kind of, you know, they'd reunite many times, obviously, but maybe that was kind of the swan song of their initial run. Because that's when they started having the problems, and Hawk kind of spazzed out and left, and Animal stuck around for a little while. But
Animal stuck around. Hawk went off to Japan and teamed with – what the hell did he team with? Chono? One of those Japanese guys, yeah.
No, Kensuke Sasaki.
So it was Sasaki, okay.
And Animal stuck around on a team with Crush for a little while.
Yep.
But yeah, you know, this match is more to me about the atmosphere and kicking off that crazy looking SummerSlam 92. And you kind of, it's one of those matches you're settling in, kind of looking at the arena, looking at the crowd, and really soaking it all in as these guys are wrestling. But as you said, this is in the thick of the Rocco stuff, and it was their last swan song before they left. So,
right.
You know, good match, definitely not top 10, which is where we're at now.
We are in our top 10, and at number 10 is a match that you have already mentioned. And that is the opener from SummerSlam 2000, which is Right to Censor against Too Cool and Rikishi. I know it's only 5 minutes, but I love the crowd, and I like Too Cool and Rikishi. And as much as their theme music annoyed the crap out of me, I did like Right to Censor. So I have a soft spot for this match, even though it's really not that much. There's a lot of short matches on that show, but that one I've always kind of liked. Even for only being 5 minutes.
Yeah,
so
kind of surprising.
So my number 10 is the six-man tag from SummerSlam 2000.
All right, my number 10, you just mentioned, and one we just talked about, so it'll be quick, is Bulldog, Tornado, Steamboat, Warlord, and Power and Glory. I like that opener, gets the crowd going, and that crowd will be smoking hot all night long. All six men looked pretty good, even Tornado at this point, even though he was usually walking around babbling to himself. I just like the setup of the teams, the way they worked with each other. So not much more to say that we didn't say on last week's SummerSlam, but that is my 10th ranked opener.
Okay. At number 9 is a match that you already mentioned, and it's because of the storyline build, and that is the opener from SummerSlam 2004, which was that awesome
Dudleys
against Kidman, Ray, and London. And it only happened the week before, so it was fairly fresh, the Spike heel turn. I believe it was the Raw before that happened. So it had only been a month, because they were giving him crap the whole time about being a cruiserweight.
Well, they were on SmackDown, weren't they, at that point?
Oh, it was a SmackDown. I'm sorry, on SmackDown, because it was all about the cruiserweights, and he was, you know, Spike was going after the cruiserweight title, which he ended up getting, of course, and you know, he ended up getting that really awesome, like, Larg the corn beard and the strange brown pants, and it was pretty cool. And the Dudley and his brothers just became his bitches. So, but I like that match actually. As much as I'm not a big fan of most of the rest of that show, I do like that match, and I like the build. So that's my number nine match, SummerSlam opener, and that is 2004, the Dudleys against Paul London, Billy Kidman, and Rey Mysterio.
All right, my number nine is one you mentioned already, 1990, Rockers and Power and Glory. Always love this match. I always have a mark for the heel double team beatdowns. I love Power and Glory, as you all know, and I was a big Rockers fan as well. So I just love watching Power and Glory slowly pick apart Marty as they curb stomp the shit out of Sean on the floor anytime he starts to stir down there. And then just finish him off with the awesome Powerplex. Really, Power and Glory's peak right out of the gate as a team. That and Survivor Series when they look the best. So big Power and Glory mark, and therefore that carries me right up and puts this match at number nine.
Yes. At number eight, I have the opener that you've already mentioned, I believe, and that is from SummerSlam 2006, Chavo Guerrero and Rey Mysterio. Mm-hmm. Again, that came off of Chavo turning on Rey and costing him the World Heavyweight Championship at the Bash, which ended up being won by King Booker. And these two always had good chemistry together. Their greatest match ever together, and you mentioned it before, was from the 2004 Bash. That match is almost 20 minutes, and it was for the Cruiserweight title. But I like this match because it even has a little more sizzle in it. And obviously, Ray would end up getting hurt at the end of the year, and there's a big comeback the following year at SummerSlam, which is not an opener. We won't talk about that match because it's not in our categories, but it is a good match. So I like this one, too, because Chavo really brings the goods here, and him and Ray go, you know, minute for minute, pace for pace, and one of my favorites. So I have that one at number eight.
All right, my number eight is another hidden J-Fave gem, and that is from 1996, Savio Vega and Owen Hart. I always like matches where they kind of match up two mid-card guys, and you get a hard-fought match with a clean finish. That really just solidifies one of the guys, and this is what this match did for Owen Hart. He was still working the cast gimmick, and he uses that to get the win. Savio, very underrated as a face, awful to watch as a heel. But when he was a face, he was good because his selling was good, and he had good burst offense. But when he had a controller match, he was terrible. So I like this as an opener. Owen was really good at this point. He had the whole campy comedy stuff with Kevin Cornette going down, coming off his awesome King of the Ring 96 commentary, and then the International Incident main event. So a lot of heat is kind of the third crony in the Camp Cornette. Savio does the job here, lays down for him. He ratchets up the sharpshooter after he clocks up with the cast and gets the win. So cool little hidden gem match there. One of my favorites.
Yes. I like it so much, I have it higher. At number seven, I have a main event that an opener that you haven't mentioned yet, so I know you like it just as much as I do, and that is the opener from SummerSlam 1995, which pits Hakushi against the 1-2-3 Kid. Really good opener, probably in all honesty, well, next to another match on this show, which we'll get to in a later list, probably the second best match on the whole card.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's a great opener, and I was a big Hakushi fan. Not used properly, but then again, everybody had their heads up their asses that year, and we'll bitch more about that in the future vaults. But this is just a great match. Both guys kept pace with each other. I think Hakushi was a stud, and I would like to have seen him, have more of a push, and just didn't happen. But it's still one of my favorites, and I have it at number seven.
All right, my number seven is a match you did mention. That's from the inaugural SummerSlam, British Bulldogs and Rougeau Brothers. Match went to a high limit draw. Very well worked, as you expect from these two teams, and a lot of animosity once you know the backstory. Really the only good match outside of the main event on that whole show. So I thought it deserved some props. I always dug both teams. Maybe a little high, but I don't know, make it wrapped up in the nostalgia of it. So that's where that goes for me.
Okay. At number six for me is the match that you just mentioned for the exact same reasons, and that is from SummerSlam 1996 between Owen Hart and Savio Vega. Owen had the cast. He was absolutely hilarious at King of the Ring. He was so much in a groove character-wise, carrying a very shaky mid-card, slowly growing, obviously, by 1996, but still needed some help. But Owen was just all over it. And again, I agree with you. Savio is a train wreck when he is a babyface, when he's a heel.
Yep.
But as a babyface, he sells well, and he was always a good, serviceable guy in the ring. And this match is a good example of that. So at my number six, I have the opener of SummerSlam 1996.
All right, number six for me is from 2001, Edge and Lance Storm for the Intercontinental title. Lance Storm had defeated Albert on SmackDown for the IC title. Edge representing WWF against the Alliance, comes in here. He avoids a miscue by Christian, who almost cost him the match, but Edge ended up winning the title, and of course that would lead to the Edge and Christian split, I believe, the next night. The next night or a week later, right? Because by Unforgiven, they were fighting already, so it was definitely right around here after the show. So Edge gets to win there. A hot opener. Lance Storm is really kind of... That was pretty much his last hurrah in 2001. Coming off his really good WCW run, so I always like that opener. Definitely a top six for me.
Yes, and I obviously have it a little higher than you to prove that how good it is. In our top five, we are at number five right now, and my number five is a match you've already mentioned, and that is the opener from SummerSlam 1998, Val Venis, D'Lo Brown. We won't try to confuse everyone again with that, but it was a tremendous match. I love both of them. Crowd was red hot. It is the Garden. I'll pontificate more about this show later, but it is a great match, and it proves that, you know what, these guys may have been goofy characters, D'Lo with the goofy thing and Val the porn star, but you know what, they were wrestlers, and they knew how to do it in the ring, and this match proved that. So they didn't deserve to get shit on anymore for being goofballs. It was actually a tremendous, tremendous opener. So that's my number five SummerSlam. I keep wanting to say WrestleMania. My number five SummerSlam opener.
All right, my number five, and this may be the most disparate one we've had on these lists. This is where I have, from 2009, Rey Mysterio and Dolph Ziggler for the IC title. These guys were having a great series of matches at that point, especially on TV, but this one's just as good. 12 and a half minutes, Rey defends the title. This is kind of at that point where you thought Dolph was going to win the title every week, and he kept not winning.
Yeah.
And then they did the whole thing where I think it was right after the show, Rey got suspended for the drug bust, and yep. Everyone assumed Dolph would win, and they had John Morrison beat Dolph to win it. So everyone thought Dolph was going to win. He was really in a groove. This is where Dolph was really starting to click with that character and with that moveset. Crowd was actually pretty split in this match out in L.A., so it did make the best pay-per-view matches DVD that they released the next year. I definitely think you underrated that one. Maybe you need to watch it again because it was a really good match.
Like I said, these rankings are tough because I know, and look, we all have talked about how you and I are great historians, but sometimes these shows are a little, of the last few years kind of leave your head, and mm-hmm. sometimes you don't exactly remember them. And I think once we get down to that point of our pay-per-view reviews, I'll probably remember it again, but I don't remember it as well as you do. So, at number four, is a match you've already mentioned, and trust me, another guy that I'm going to give a lot of love to tonight, and that is Edge and Lance Storm from SummerSlam 2001. A great opener, a match that both guys really brought the goods. Lance Storm is just a great, serviceable wrestler, one of the best the last 15 years in ring, and Edge is Edge. Still a little rough, but it was kind of like Edge 01 was like Brett 91. He was kind of, just kind of getting his feet wet and really starting to get the singles push in gear. And this is just one of my favorites. I've always loved this match. And it is my number four of all time of openers from 2001.
All right, my number four, you mentioned before, so I won't get into it much. Hakushi and 1-2-3 Kid. Working a high-flying cruiserweight style that wasn't really seen too much at this point in WWF. Hakushi really brought that in and gave Kid someone to work with on his level. Kind of an off-forgotten match, I think, because it was kind of right as Hakushi was about to turn face and right around when Kid was starting to turn heel. So it's kind of lost before they both switched.
Right.
But good opener. So we should probably get moving, though, I guess. So number three, go ahead.
Yes, exactly. At number three...
looks like we both have the same top three, though.
Yes, we probably do. So let's see if the question is if it's in the same order.
Yep.
My number three is Rey Mysterio and Kurt Angle from 2002. Love that feud. Kurt is just awesome. And, and that's when he had those ridiculous candy striper tights. But Rey was brand new, fresh on the scene, big with over with the fans. Perfect guy to team him with because Kurt was just such a smarmy prick. Great opener. Great chemistry between these two guys. I wish they'd worked more together over time. Didn't, but definitely a top three SummerSlam opener for me. Kurt and Rey from 2002.
All right, we do not have these in the same order. My number three is Mankind Triple H from 1997, the cage match. Of course, this was coming off there a really good feud that kicked off at King of the Ring when Triple H defeated Mankind in the finals, continued at Canadian Stampede where they fought to the draw, and then into here. And of course, this was also with the whole Dude Love stuff, kind of morphing all his characters together at this point, coming off the Summer of Love. He wrestles Mankind, but at the end, he rips off the shirt. He's got the Dude Love heart, and then he starts tapping and struts off. Of course, it also features that sick spot where China slammed the door on Bick's head. Mm-hmm. But it was a good win for Mankind, and this was kind of the first step to help solidify him as seen as kind of a main event level. But while we're here, I might as well just mention my number two, because you just talked about it, and that is Kurt Angle, Rey Mysterio. I love that match. It is a sprint from start to finish. Rey's first pay-per-view match, and he came out with a bang. Kurt Angle, it was nice to see him with someone smaller than him that he could kind of toss around and work a power style. And those guys just went balls to the wall the whole time. And that is about nearly as perfect as an opener as you can find.
Right. So we obviously do have the same, and this is no surprise, we both have the same number one, because my number two is Mankind and Triple H from 1997. Obviously already a Triple H mark at that point, and I love cage matches. And it is the only gimmick opener ever in SummerSlam history, and that is, of course, in a cage. And yeah, and Mick mentions it on his DVD and in his first book that door shot by China was not protected. It hurt like son of a bitch. I think he said it was one of the biggest. That next to the choke slam through the roof at the 98 King of the Ring, that was the most pain I think he said he ever felt in his career.
Yep.
Was that that heavy, heavy blue metal on his forehead from China at SummerSlam 97. So obviously, we share our number one, and this is no surprise. Justin's in my favorite WrestleMania opener.
SummerSlam.
Damn it, I got to stop that. SummerSlam opener of all time is indeed the Brainbusters and the Heart Foundation from 1989.
Yeah, I don't think we need to get much into that. Everyone knows it's awesome. Great tag match. Different style than we usually see in WWF, where they kind of do the reverse heat segment a little bit.
Yep.
Good stuff. But yeah, we should probably move on for time-wise. I think everyone knows how great that match is.
Yes, it is tremendous. So, and that is, of course, again, number one SummerSlam opener of all time, the Brainbusters and the Heart Foundation from 1989.
Okay, so let's quickly just move on to the venue. So let's kind of move quickly through these.
Absolutely.
So we can spend some time on the better stuff. Okay. So how many do we have?
One, two, 17.
Okay, so for me, number 17, and I just want to make sure I got the year right on this, was the Conseco Fieldhouse. And that was for 2008.
Yes.
A nondescript arena for a nondescript show. Yeah, not much to say about it, honestly.
Yeah. At my number 17, I have that one notch above, because my number 17 is the Air Canada Center in Toronto from 2004. That crowd was the biggest bunch of jack-offs I've ever seen of a crowd in my entire life. They don't know who to root for. They don't know who to cheer. They did precipitate Edge's heel turn, which is nice, but for the most part, they were a bunch of fucking morons throughout that whole show. They were doing the wave during title matches. I don't know what the hell they smoked up there, but they totally destroyed all the feng shui in that arena. Now, the matches themselves, a lot of them weren't that great to begin with. They could have helped out, but they didn't. They screwed the pooch. I get so disgusted watching that show.
I have that a lot higher just due to perversion.
I couldn't think of it that way. To me, it ruined the show for me. So that's my number 17. The worst venue in SummerSlam history, the Air Canada Center in 2004.
All right, my number 16, which is kind of surprising because I like this show, but it's the Gund Arena from 1996. I thought the crowd actually hurt this show actively. I thought the show would be remembered a lot better if it wasn't for that dead crowd. I didn't think they were into much at all. I know there were some spots that really can't blame them for not being into. And I know they had to sit through that long boiler room brawl as well. But honestly, I just wasn't a fan of that crowd, of those fans. And the arena itself, nondescript. So.
Okay. I have it a little higher, but not too much higher. My number 16 is the one you mentioned, and that's Conseco Fieldhouse in Indianapolis for SummerSlam 2008. Again, just another place.
Yep.
Nothing fancy. It's okay. But it didn't bring anything extra to the show.
Okay. So my number 15 was from 1995, and that's the Igloo in Pittsburgh. Another crowd that I thought could have helped the show a little bit more than it did. They were hot for the one ladder match, but other than that, there wasn't much going on. So just kind of a forgettable crowd.
Okay. You know what? We need to move up a number because I did not have the Igloo numbered. So I had the Igloo at the bottom.
Okay.
Probably because that show stinks so bad. So we'll just move up a number. I have the Igloo at number 18. So we are at now number 15.
No, 14. So you had 14. Igloo at 17.
Okay, so I had Igloo 17. At number 14, I have the America West Arena in Phoenix for SummerSlam 2003.
No, I'm sorry, 18. You're right. So this is 15.
Yeah, this is 15. America West. That's okay. America West Arena. Venues are tough because obviously they're multiple mm-hmm. venues, so it's tough to count them. But my number 15 is the America West Arena in Phoenix for SummerSlam 2003. Considering it was the first ever pay per view in the state of Arizona, that crowd shit the bed. Now, the difference between that crowd and the 2004 crowd in Toronto is that the crowd was handed a big dumping pile of crap at the end. We'll get to that the match later on a later list, but. They didn't bring as much to the table as they could have, and they could have made this show actually a lot better than it was. So I'm a little disappointed in the Phoenix crowd because it was their first ever pay-per-view in that state, and they laid an egg for me in terms of energy. So it could have been a lot better.
All right, my number 15 is 2001's San Jose Compact Center. You know, they were up and down, but I'm basing it just kind of on overall crowd and memorable memorability of the actual arena itself, and to me there wasn't anything that stood out with that crowd in my eyes. So
okay, this is a disparagement. I have that a little higher than you do. That crowd.
I think I just liked. It wasn't even that I thought they were bad. I think I just liked all the other ones ahead of them.
Okay. At number 14 on the list, my number 14 show venue is the United Center in Chicago for SummerSlam 1994. It was good. It wasn't great. The show was good. The matches were good. The crowd was hot at points, at pockets, but and it was a brand new arena, so I gave it a little bit of a bump. But realistically, it could have been better for a debut show. Remember this? That was the first show. That was the first event ever at the United Center. The Bulls would not obviously play their first game there till the. Actually, they won't play the first game there for a while. I don't think they played their first game there till the following season. I think
No, they would have played that year. Why not?
I thought I just read that they was it 90. Maybe they did play 94.
No,
why did they, I think they waited
have.
A year?
No,
they must
I'm sure
have.
They didn't.
Considering it was the first event ever in that building, obviously something happened because Vince never went back there. So
I think it had to do with the deal that he had with Rosemont. It had to be something like that.
Yeah, and WCW ended up becoming. A prime occupant at the United Center, but considering it was the first event ever in that building, I thought they could have brought more than they did.
All right. My number 14 is the Raleigh Entertainment and Sports Complex for SummerSlam 2000. Again, just like 2001, a solid crowd, nothing memorable at the arena, but to me, nothing stood out from that crowd to make me rank them higher. So that's where they're at.
Okay. All right. At number 13 for me is the Palace of Auburn Hills in Auburn Hills, Michigan, for SummerSlam 1993. Very patriotic. They had all the obviously based on the main event, which we'll get to later. But I thought they were really good, you know, and they weren't handed the greatest show on earth. But I thought they weren't bad under the circumstances. I thought, and the arena was brand new. It was about 5 years old, which is kind of brand new for back then. And I don't know. I liked it. I thought the layout was nice. I thought the crowd was pretty good for a show that wasn't that great and a card that, you know, was kind of underwhelming, but the crowd, I think, gives it a bump for me. So I've always had a soft spot for the crowd, not the show itself, but I do like that audience in at the Palace in 1993. So that's my number 13.
All right, for me is the MCI Center for WrestleMania. I'm getting your disease now.
Yeah, I know. I got to stop.
SummerSlam 2005. I like that crowd just because of the energy they brought to the Hogan-Shawn Michaels match. Outside of that, nothing crazy, but, you know, I would kind of link the antics to that show as well. You had all the presidential kind of theme to it as well, and Batista being the hometown boy there. So, you know, good crowd. I think it is where it should be ranking-wise.
Okay. We are at number 12 now. And at number 12 for me, see, you kind of slammed this crowd, but I didn't think it was that bad. And that was the Gund Arena for SummerSlam 96. I feel bad for them. I actually – maybe I'm giving it out of pity because they got stuck with that – with that boiler room thing, where you know they didn't have much of a match for what the first 15 minutes or so, and then they got the end. So I like that Gund Arena crowd better than you do, and they end up having a good main event. They didn't get a chance to see Stone. Well, they did, but it wasn't on the pay per view. But I like that Gund Arena crowd a little bit more than you do. So that's my number 12.
Okay, mine is the one you just mentioned, America West Arena, and the only reason I bumped them was because of their awesome reaction to Goldberg. To me, for that match, that moment alone, that they single-handedly really could have vaulted him to being the champion if they listened to the crowd. That and their reaction to the Dudleys in that opener was good, too. But I really love the way they treat the Goldberg. It makes it feel like a moment until, of course, their dreams are squashed at the end. So that's why I rank that.
Okay. At number 11 is the TD Bank North Garden in Boston for SummerSlam 2006.
Yep, I got that. Obviously, exactly the same spot.
Yep, but Cena in the main event, DX, a lot for them to get excited about, and they were. So that's why I have them at 11.
Same.
Okay. Number 10, you just mentioned it. I have it a little higher, and that's the MCI Center in D.C. for 2005. Batista, the hometown boy, the good main event. They did a pretty good job. They got the crowd. The crowd really got themselves going to that show. And it wasn't a new arena, but newer than some of the others. So I like that one at number 10.
All right, mine there is the Target Center, 1999. Every crowd in 1999 was hot. So to me, they get no special points because the product was so hot. Cool looking arena, though. I believe it was fairly new at that point, right?
Yes.
And of course, you had Jesse involved. So there's a lot of hometown pops for him as well. So solid crowd, but nothing too memorable.
Okay. We are now in our – we're officially in the top 10 now of the all-time greatest SummerSlam venues. At number 9, I have the Entertainment and Sports Complex in Raleigh for SummerSlam 2000. They had a great show. They had a couple of great matches, two or three great matches, and I thought they were red hot. The arena looked a little weird. It looked like an airplane hangar. So they lose a point or two for just looking very blah, but the crowd, I thought, was really hot for that match, for that show.
Okay. My number 9 is the Spectrum in Philadelphia from 1990. Another crowd that was hot pretty much the whole way through, especially that Hogan Earthquake match. They were really into that, and Tornado and the Demolition Hearts match. They were insane. Kind of a unique-looking arena, a lot of history, and I also like, of course, it's memorable for the backstage with the Dusty chasing the limo as Sapphire hopped in the limo. So I always remember that one shot. So
with the camera guy in the shot too, or the guy with the boom mic or whatever it was, right? Yep. Okay. At number 8, I have the Compaq Center in San Jose for SummerSlam 2001. I think you're kind of selling the crowd a little short. I thought they were awesome for the show. Of course, it was the peak of the invasion. You had a great card with a lot of mixed matches involving WCW, ECW, and WWF guys. I thought they were red hot for almost all the show. Considering they are, and I almost give it a point because they were a good crowd in California, which crowds usually blow. But they were pretty hot on that night. So I give San Jose a lot of props at number 8 for the Compaq Center.
My number 8 is United Center. I think that crowd is hotter than you give them credit for. And I also like the look of that arena. It was very open, very bright. And to me, I calculate that highly when I'm putting together my arena rankings and what I imagine, if I remember the show and it had a unique look to it. To me, that plays a big role in this. So when I think of SummerSlam 94, I picture that blue, open, light, big arena, brand new arena. So to me, that was a big part of it. And I really like that crowd for the Razor, Diesel, and Bret Owen matches going nuts during that beatdown at the end of that. So they ran kind of high with me. Maybe more for nostalgia, but I always enjoyed that arena.
Okay. At number 7 for me, you might be befuddled by this because the building itself is a complete dump. But they were handed maybe one of the greatest overall shows of all time, and that's the Nassau Coliseum for SummerSlam 2002. That crowd is off the fucking charts. But then again, the show was off the charts. So
not too befuddled because I actually have it higher than you.
Oh, okay. Because the building's a shithole. Yeah. I know you've never been there. I've been there for a couple of things. It's a big concrete dump. No wonder the Islanders want to move. But it's got a lot of history in it. You look up at the Islander banners, the Billy Joel banners. It does have a lot of history. It's not the prettiest building. But that night, the Long Island crowd was off the fucking charts. But then again, they were handed one of the greatest overall shows of all time. So at number 7, I have the Nassau Coliseum.
Okay, I have the Palace of Auburn Hills there. Any crowd that can get into Lex Luger and Yokozuna as much as they did, to me, definitely deserves some props. And
that
of course,
is true,
they
yes.
were really into the Steiners for their hometown return. So I like that crowd. I like that show. Props.
All right. At number 6, I have the Target Center for SummerSlam 99. Jesse just makes it for me. He's one of my favorites of all time, and the crowd was off the charts as well. So I like the Target Center at number 6.
All right. My number 6 is the Staples Center, which has kind of now become the home of SummerSlam over the last few years. A few memorable shows, but I like that it's the home, that they're there every year. They kind of have the access thing going on. It makes it feel a little more special. So to me, they get bumped up just for that. And the crowds for SummerSlam really have been pretty solid every year. So.
Right. At number 5, a venue you already mentioned for historical purposes, and that was the Spectrum for SummerSlam 90. I can't believe they haven't been back to Philly for SummerSlam. That's the only time ever. Very weird. The big wide parking lot, the big wide driveway, that old school, Northeast arena look. And of course, memorable moments on that show. So I have the Spectrum at number 5.
All right. My number 5 is the one you mentioned a long time ago, and that is the Air Canada Center. I thought it was a unique looking arena, and I just thought that the energy they brought made an otherwise forgettable card into a memorable card. Regardless if it was for the right reason or not, they really did leave their mark on that show.
Yeah.
To the point that JR had to talk about it. I mean, to me, that's a huge deal when they actually reference how fucked up the crowd is.
This is your Waylon Mercy philosophy here.
Well, if you think about it, that show is memorable. You immediately think of the crowd. So to me, that's a unique venue that the crowd affected the show that much. But they were normal and good for the Benoit Orton match, right? Or actually, they even kind of popped for Orton winning, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I remember the Taker JBL match was a disaster. The crowd was half out of it. Obviously, they were half out of the Triple Threat IC because they, in essence, turned their hometown guy heel.
Yep.
So it just, to me, it just seemed ass backwards.
Yeah, maybe I guess it has to do more with them being so memorable.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you saying that the crowd drew, carried the show. I just thought they carried it for the wrong reasons. That's just my opinion. At number four, a venue you already mentioned, and for the same reasons, and that's the Staples Center in Los Angeles, which is now going to be the home for SummerSlam. That bothers me because I may never get to see one.
Yeah, they'll move eventually once they get off this Hollywood kick. But
yeah, but it is cool to know that they have a home base right now. So that makes me feel good. So I have it at number four.
All right, my number four is the shithole Nassau Coliseum. That crowd was totally bucked all other Long Island crowds that usually suck. But they were red hot for that whole show and really made that show memorable.
Yes. Number three.
Especially the main event, turning on Rock and siding with Brock.
Pretty much, yeah. And then they were handed, in my opinion, one of the greatest matches of all time.
Yep.
And I'll mention it now because it's not going to be on any of our lists, and that's, of course, Triple H and Shawn Michaels. One of my favorites ever.
Yep.
Number three, probably one you have higher, and that's Wembley Stadium for SummerSlam 92. The only reason I don't have it higher is because big stadiums, the noise dilutes. So if I imagine if that was the O2 Arena or if that was something with a roof, if that was a dome, it would be number one. But unfortunately, you don't – I know the energy's there, but you just don't feel it as much as you could have. But that doesn't take away from the fact that the crowd was great. I love that wide, wide shot with all those people in the little tiny ring and the long ramp. Very cool for me. So I have Wembley at number three.
Yep. For my number three, I have the Meadowlands, 89 and 97. Two very memorable shows. They were smoking hot throughout all of 89, and very good throughout 97 as well. Memorable arena for two very big SummerSlams. And I'll say now, I do have number two is Wembley Stadium. I just love the look of that arena. I love the uniqueness, the cool feel of all the British fans doing little speeches before the show. I like how it's a light early, dark late. Just a very unique and probably one of the most unique arenas they've ever done. So to me, that definitely deserves to be ranked this high.
Yes. At my number two, I have the Brendan Byrne Arena / Continental Airlines Arena / Izod Center. And you actually missed one. They did 1989, 1997, and 2007.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
So that was great because you had two returns. You had Triple H coming back and you had Ray coming back.
Yep.
So that show had a lot of energy as well. And 89 and 97, of course, speak for themselves. So obviously, we've done it again, folks, just like we did at WrestleMania. Until something knocks it off its perch, the greatest SummerSlam venue of all time is Madison Square Garden. And why not? Three great shows, 1988, 1991, and 1998. Three shows, three home runs.
Yes. So, well, 88, yeah. But I know
88, well, 88, well, 88 kind of has the same pass as WrestleMania 1.
Yeah.
But just the show is slightly better.
Yeah, no, when you factor in just 91 and 98 alone, makes it worth
it. Right, exactly. So the greatest SummerSlam venue of all time, just like the greatest WrestleMania venue of all time, is Madison Square Garden.
All right, cool. So let's quickly move on to the tag title matches. And there's not as many of these. We'll be kind of quick with these.
Yes, there's only I have 13. Is that correct?
Sounds right. 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yep, 13. So why don't you go 13. Ahead and kick us off?
All right. At number 13 is probably one of the worst matches in the history of the universe. And that's from SummerSlam 2001, Undertaker and Kane against DDP and Canyon in the cage. That show is a complete, utter piece of junk. That was during the rare times when when Taker was actually using his backstage pull. He rarely ever does that, but he did that for this show. And
really that year, 2 years, is when he really did it, and then he kind of slowed down.
Yeah. I just hate that match. Absolutely hate it. And I love and as we'll talk later, I love the rest of that show, but that match just sucks ass beyond all.
I actually have that surprisingly just a little higher. To me, the worst tag team title match in SummerSlam history is from 1996. Body Donna, Smoking Guns, Gotta Wins, New Rockers. To me, 96, as much as I love that year for the rejuvenation of the promotion, that was really where you could see the writing on the wall of how awful the tag division was. That's when it really bottomed out. I mean, it wasn't that great in 94 and 95, but by 96, you had the same four crappy teams fighting over the titles every week. And until a month later, when Bulldog and Owen kind of ushered in the new era of tag wrestling in the WWF, that kind of, you know, lasted to the Renaissance, the tag division is on life support, and that shows here. The New Rockers were, you know, they could have been something good, but they were booked as a joke. And I think this is where they debuted. It was a month before they debuted Cloudy. I think she was gone.
Yeah.
Or he was gone by this point. Yep. Godwins were kind of, whatever at this point. Body Donners were on their way out because, actually, this is a match where Skip looks like an 80-year-old man with a neck brace on the apron. Doesn't even get in the ring.
I forgot about that. And, I finished.
Smoking Guns, you would have thought they were the Road Warriors circa 1984 at this point, 96. They were just like so far ahead of all these other teams. Ring-wise and look-wise, that it was just, it was kind of sad to see.
Yeah, well, that's multiple Road Warrior references for you too, my friend.
Yeah.
Okay, I can loan you the shoulder pads anytime you'd like. At number 12 for me is from SummerSlam 1998, and that's the New Age Outlaws against Mankind and Kane. Of course, there was no Kane. It was pretty much the New Age Outlaws against Mankind, and it was a pretty much glorified handicap squash. So
I have that higher basis. What I was saying before.
I love the New Age Outlaws, but I just, this match just annoys me. Maybe because and again, you're talking about a show that's, you know, unbelievable. But this match, standalone, obviously is not even really a match. It's a handicap match.
Differing list we've had. We'll see.
At number 12 for me is the New Age Outlaws against Mankind and an absent Kane at SummerSlam 98.
All right, my number 12 is from 1992, and that's the Natural Disasters against the Beverly Brothers. It guts me to put the Beverlys this low, but basically just a TV title defense at that point. Disasters, it was a mismatch on paper. No one, I don't think, ever really thought the Beverly Brothers had a shot of winning the titles of this show. It's a decent enough match for what it is, but to me, there just wasn't much to it.
Hmm. I actually have that match considerably higher.
Okay. Interesting.
Don't know why.
I don't know either.
We'll get to that when I get to it. All right. At number 11, from SummerSlam 2003, I know I kind of slammed it earlier, but I have it there, and that is, of course, La Rez against the Dudleys.
Okay.
Again, I'm not going to get into it again. No, okay, it's okay. It's not great. It's all
right. Okay. So number 11, right, Ron?
Yes, number 11.
Okay. I have from 2000... I always forget the later years. I think it was 2009, the Jericho Show. Is that 2009?
Yes, 2009, yep.
Jericho Show, Chris Jericho and Big Show defending titles against Crime Time. Another television tag title defense. It was a last-minute match added. Jericho and Big Show came out to talk about how they were dominant. Crime Time challenged them, and then Jericho Show retained the title. So I liked Jericho Show as a team, but this match was nothing special.
I actually have that higher. Wow, I am a glutton for punishment. At number 10, believe it or not, I have that same four-way clusterfuck that you have from SummerSlam 96. I don't know why I like it. Maybe it's Al Snow in that weird rocker role, or at the time I did like the Smoking Guns. Oh, something about the match I like. Again, it's only number 10. I mean, I have 9 matches better than that, but I like the match a little bit better than you do. I don't know why, because this is your era, the mid-90s, but I don't know. I've always kind of had a soft spot for that mess.
All right, my number 10, you mentioned already, and that's Undertaker and Kane against Kane and DDP in the Cage.
Wow, you are a glutton for punishment, huh?
All right, look, I will admit, I liked that Canyon DDP Taker Kane run. I actually don't mind the Chronic match.
Well, you were in school, so you might have been drunk. I don't know. It was all the Beirut you played, but
I didn't like the way they squashed him. To me, I did not enjoy that part of it. But the feud itself was interesting, and I liked seeing Canyon. I was a big Canyon mark in WCW. I liked seeing him on a pay-per-view like that, getting a title shot, or having a title match. And the fact that it was in a cage, and I know it's basically a squash, but the crowd was hot, and I don't know, to me, I'd rather watch that than the 3 matches below it, so that's why I put it there.
See, I always got, the other thing annoying me about that match is they did that weird rule where, you know, you have to be the team that leaves the cage, which made no fucking sense whatsoever, but anyway. At number 9, surprisingly, I thought maybe you would think I'd have this match lower, but I actually don't. And that is from SummerSlam 1993, the Steiners against the Heavenly Bodies. Good match, hot crowd for them. I'm not a big Steiners fan, never really was, but I did like them here. And crowd was hot for them, and I thought it was a pretty good match.
All right, I have La Rez and Dudley's from 2003. We're not going to get into that again, so you can go ahead and move on.
Okay, at number 8, I have the match you had earlier, which is Jericho against Crime Time from SummerSlam 2009. I love the build. It was a perfect – the only thing that annoys me – and I would have it higher if Crime Time had won. The build was perfect. It was set up for them to win, And then they didn't, and then that was it. They were finished after that. Yep. So that's the only thing that ruins that match for me is the fact that Crime
well,
Time...
Well, Jericho, they had to keep them hot because they feuded with DX after this, right?
Exactly, yeah. Winter, so. Soon after this. Yeah. And then they end up... they Well, it was a little bit later because then they have, it was TLC pay-per-view that they that DX
that's right, yeah.
won. But still, I agree that they needed to keep the belts hot. But really, it was, I wouldn't mind seeing Crime Time win it. But
all right, my number
I have
eight,
that one at number eight. Yep.
My number eight is from 2002. Christian and Lance Storm against Booker and Goldust. I like Booker Goldust as a team. I think a lot of people do. A lot of charisma, a lot of uniqueness, and Christian and Storm were good. But I thought this group, mainly when you started working Jericho in, would have better matches later in the year. This match was good, and the crowd was into it. But I think it just fits perfectly right here.
Okay. I actually have that as my number seven.
Okay.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
2002. Yeah. The. I liked... you know, I like Booker and Goldust as well. You know, the Un-Americans, Lance Storm, Christian, good team. Booker and Goldust were just great TV for that time because the product was so unknown at that moment. They were kind of in limbo. They were good for, you know, they were good on Raw for, you know, 8-9 minutes of hilarity. They would get even funnier by 2003, but same reason. I have that match at number seven.
Okay,
it's a good match to watch.
My number seven is from 1988, and that is Hart Foundation and Demolition. Hart Foundation had just turned face, and you had the whole stuff with Jimmy Hart, that kind of high-level concept idea where Jimmy Hart was given the secrets of Mr. Fuji and Demolition. Obviously, they'd have a much better match later on. This one's good, solid, but nothing spectacular.
Okay. We are now in the top five. We are right now ranking the
number six.
Number six, I'm sorry. The greatest SummerSlam tag title matches of all time. Number six for me. And I, you know, maybe I, you know what? We're even. Because you're a glutton for punishment for that redonkulous Toronto crowd. My number six match of all time is the Natural Disasters in the Beverly Hills, SummerSlam 92. I don't know why. You know, I don't know.
There's
something
I liked
about that. There's something I liked about the happy-go-lucky fat guys with, the smiles and the belts. I don't know why.
No, I mean, they did a good job making them look dominant in that match.
Yeah, and the Beverlys, I wouldn't say you could... I don't know. Maybe
no
I'm
way.
Being
trust
optimistic.
Me. I was as big a fan as I was at that point, and even I, semi-mark into the Beverly Brothers, knew they had no fucking chance of winning that match.
I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I liked the happy-go-lucky babyface Natural Disasters in that match in 1992. So I have that one at number six.
All right, my number six is one you talked about. New Age Outlaws, Kane and Mankind. I like the whole stuff with Kane hiding in the dumpster, and he pops up and cracks Mankind with a sledgehammer. I don't know. I like I said, I'm a mark for the whole double team. Even though this was a reversal, but you know what? The whole attitude was a reversal. So the faces beat the shit out of the heel was apropos. And plus, don't forget about the great Mankind. I'm gonna go play in traffic. Promo. This was right when he started to do the comedic stuff. So
yes.
You know that plays a role in it as well for me. So.
Yep. Now we're in the top five.
Yep.
And at number five is a match you already mentioned, and that was Hart Foundation Demolition 1. From SummerSlam 1988. Very raw. Demolition still kind of finding their way as a great tag team. Hart Foundation already established, and I thought it was they worked very well together. So I have that one at number five.
All right, my number five was from 1999, and that is Undertaker and Big Show against X-Pac and Kane. I love the Undertaker Big Show team. I liked all the stuff where Taker was making Big Show go through all the different rituals to try and make him a man and teach him how to be evil. Of course, the whole story about leaving him in the desert and he had to carry his motorcycle back because it ran out of gas and all that shit. And I like the whole X-Pac and Kane stuff as well, where X-Pac was starting to humanize Kane for the first time. And they were a great babyface team. A lot of fun that match was. And Taker, of course, cracked X-Pac with a great tombstone to win that match.
At number four...
I've been watching you from afar for as long as I can remember. You're all a real man can need, and never has been. This is love, girl. This is more than a crush. Yeah.
It was all a meant to work. Before Rocco ruined everything for me, the LOD were the tag team champions. I won't get into this match because we talked about it last week. SummerSlam 1991, LOD destroying the Nasty Boys and winning the straps at Madison Square Garden. So that's my number four match.
Okay, I actually have that in the same exact spot, number four as well. So
you do?
Go right ahead to number three.
Yep. Oh, you are, huh? Yeah, maybe you'll stop laughing soon.
Hey, I'm not the one that was talking creepy tales about them.
Hey, you know what? Well, you know what? It's starting to rub off, though. You may not be saying it on the air, but I know you're feeling
the only guy rubbing off on the LOD is you.
At number three is from SummerSlam 1990. It is Heart Foundation Demolition 2. Oh. Obviously, more line in the sand. No pun intended. Here, Heart's big over faces. Demolition's become the cheating heels. And, LOD runs in at the end. How about that, huh? And the Hearts, their swan song as one of the greatest tag teams ever. They win the straps here. So I have that one at number three.
All right, my number three is Steiners and Heavenly Bodies from 93. Heavenly Bodies is the debut in WWF. I love this match. I think it's at a whole nother level than what they had been used to be seeing out of tag division at this point. Mm-hmm. Steiners were at home, and this is kind of their peak as a team in WWF. Where they really just go out there and have a dominant title defense, and Heavenly Bodies were able to hang with their style and their pace.
Yes. My number two is a match you already mentioned, and that's because I just love the chemistry between them, and that is X-Pac and Kane against Taker and Show at 1999. I just love Taker and Show. Taker was just grooming this big monster. It's like this, you know, he was still the sick, crazy son of a bitch, and Show was his muscle, and, you know, he just called him, "Hey, Show. I'm a getting Show." You know, I just love the camaraderie between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And X-Pac and Kane were probably one of the more underrated teams of the Attitude Era. I thought they had great chemistry together, little guy, big guy. Kane, I think this was the stretch where Kane really came into his own as an in-ring guy. And I just love that match. So I have that at number two.
All right, my number two is the Heart Foundation Demolition from 90. I espoused all my love for it when we did our Vintage Vault. So
yes. Obviously, once again, we share number one.
Yeah, because third straight list.
But you know what? Again, there's really no need to explain ourselves because everyone knows it. The greatest tag team title match in SummerSlam history is, of course, TLC 1 from SummerSlam 2000. We really don't have to discuss it. We'll get into it, obviously, way down the line when we get to that show. But Edge, Christian, the Hardys, the Dudleys, there's nothing more to say. They set the bar at WrestleMania that year, and then they just amped it up with some more weapons and then just beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah,
and
I mean, WrestleMania was what kind of put them all on the map. And this is the match that solidified this tag division as being tremendous.
Yes. So we won't expound any further. We'll get more into it way down the line for episode 267 of the Place to Be podcast. The number one greatest SummerSlam tag title match of all time is TLC 1 from SummerSlam 2000.
Okay. Let's quickly move on to the IC title. And I'll do the first one this time around.
Yes. You start first this time. Go ahead.
All right.
19 title matches. That's what I have.
Okay. So number 19, I have Umaga, Kennedy, and Carlito. I believe that is from
08.
Okay. 08. Nothing. I mean, I barely remember the match. So to me, nothing special going on there.
Okay. At number 19, and maybe it's markout moment, it's huge, but since we're basing it on just the match, obviously number 19 for me is the Ultimate Warrior and the Honky Tonk Man from SummerSlam 88.
I have that a little higher, actually.
It's a five-star markout moment, but as a match, it's just like Orlando Jordan and Chris Benoit, same thing. So there you go there. For me, 1988, Honky Tonk Man and Ultimate Warrior.
Okay, my next one is Santino Marella and Beth Phoenix versus Kofi and Mickie James. Another match, kind of like the first one, a little nondescript, only memorable for obviously being a mixed tag match with the titles on the line.
Mm. At number 18 for me, the match you just mentioned, Umaga Kennedy and I just blanked
Carlito.
Out. Carlito from 2000, and that was actually 2007.
Okay, yeah, 2008 was the Beth one.
Yeah, 2007 was Umaga, Kennedy, and Carlito.
All right, next up for me was another mixed tag, and that's Eddie and China versus Val and Trish from 2000. I like the Val and Trish union, and Eddie and China, of course, had their chemistry going. And that's where Eddie basically outsmarted China, right, to win her title?
Yes.
Okay, so.
Okay, so that is number what? Number 17? At number 17 for me is the match you just talked about, and that's number 29 for me is, and you obviously have this much higher. We've already talked about it, and that's Ray and Dolph Ziggler from 2009. Mm-hmm. I know you have that a lot higher. I have that at 17.
Okay, my next one is Ultimate Warrior Honky. Mainly, I gave it a little bump over the other ones because of how memorable it is. To me, it's more memorable than those other four put together. You know, obviously the match isn't anything too special, but it really propelled the Warrior to be a mega star. So, and it capped off a great storyline with Honky Tonk Man's endless run.
Exactly. Okay, so at number 16, I have the match from 2008, the tag. I just thought it was entertaining, and I love Beth and Mickey. They're both hot, and, and Santino was awesome in that stretch. So from pure entertainment purposes, I like that match at number 16.
Okay, I'm on 15. All right, so I have from 1990, Texas Tornado, Mr. Perfect. We talked about this a lot in our review. Red hot match, big pop for Tornado, but only 5 minutes and kind of made Perfect almost look like a little bit of a jobber.
Okay. For me, at number 15, I have the one from last year, and that's Dolph Ziggler and Kofi Kingston in the no contest with the Nexus running in. I already got into why I like that match, so.
I'm actually on 13. I think, I don't know if we miscounted something or if I'm missing one.
Really? At number 19, I have 88. 18, I have 2007. 17, I have 2009. 16, I have 2008. 15, I have 2010. I'm at 14. So we're only one behind. You're only off
so
by
that
one.
Was your 14th?
No, my number 14 is 1990, Perfect and Tornado.
Okay, I might be missing one somewhere then. We'll see. All right, next one is Jeff Jarrett, D'Lo Brown from 99, which we already talked about.
Right. My number 13 is the – now, see, I'm giving this match a lot of props considering I've already shit on the crowd, and that's Batista, Jericho, and Edge from 2004. I have nothing wrong with the match. The crowd just kind of fucked all over it, so – but I have that one at 13.
All right, I have that one at 12. Money in the Merrill, because that's when Batista was throwing that crazy forearm. Remember that?
Yeah.
Knocking guys out with that. And, of course, I had the, like you said, the crazy crowd, so that's my number 12.
Okay. My number 12 is a match that a lot of people would like to have in their top three, but the two guys just couldn't deliver, and that was Shawn Michaels and Mr. Perfect from 1993. I know that's a match we always love to talk about and wish that could have been better, and it just wasn't. So I have that one at 12.
All right, that's my number 11. Again, okay. I think that it's put too much hype on those poor guys, talking about how it was going to be the match of the century, the best IC title match ever, five-star classic, and then they just couldn't go out and do it. Kind of a styles clash between the two guys, actually, so...
At my number 12, or my number 11, my number 11, I didn't move my cursor up. At number 11, I have that tag from 2000 with China and Eddie, Val, and Trish. I was entertained by that, and I liked Eddie at that time, and China was hot, and Trish was pretty hot, and Val was on a roll as a good wrestler. So overall, I thought the package was good. I'm not a big fan of singles belts in tag matches, but this one didn't bother me. So I like that one at number 11.
Okay, my number 10 is in a match we've talked about before, and it's Edge and Lance Storm from 2001. Good opener, good IC title match, but to me not as memorable as the 9 I have above it.
Okay, at number 10, I have D'Lo and Jarrett from 1999. Of course, it's half the match because the European title was also on the line. So I have that one at number 10. We've talked about it already. Love Jarrett in that role, and D'Lo was in a good role too in that summer.
Okay, my number 9 is from 1994, Razor Ramon and Diesel. Classic match, classic feud. You had Walter Payton and Sean out ringside chasing each other around. Of course, I already talked to the United Center crowd, and I really always liked that match and that whole storyline.
Right. Okay. My number 9 is one you've already mentioned. In fact, you just mentioned it, and that was Edge and Lance Storm from 2001. You'll understand my love for the Rated R Superstar a little bit later on, but I just love the way that his singles push really got into high gear. He'd won the King of the Ring. And then this is just a great match, and Lance is just a great guy to work with. So I have that one at number 9.
Okay. My number 8 is Rey Mysterio, Dolph Ziggler. I think I've talked enough about that and why I like it. So.
Okay. My number 8 is the first time we've talked about this match, and it's probably one of the most historical matches in WWF history for many reasons, and that is Owen Hart and Steve Austin from SummerSlam 97. The match is great until the last 2 minutes. We all know that, and we all know why, and we're not going to get into that, but I love that match. The whole thing about Steve had to kiss Owen's ass if he loses, and Stone Cold was just on a roll, and it's great crowd, just one of my favorites. So I have that one at number 8.
All right, my number 7 match is Rob Van Dam and Chris Benoit from SummerSlam 2002.
I actually have it there, too. So.
Okay, yeah, a lot of heat on that match, a lot of expectation for that match. I think it under-delivered just a little bit, almost like Shawn and Perfect, because the expectations were so high. But Benoit was just still coming back from that neck injury. While he looked good, he wasn't really Benoit level at that point. So not quite probably as good as the hype had hoped to be.
Yeah. I think those two guys probably aren't as – I don't want to say they don't have chemistry, but they're much different than people think. Benoit is not as fluid as RVD is. Benoit is a lot stiffer. He was a lot more very focused on grappling. RVD was a high flyer, so they weren't as symmetrical as people thought they were, and that's why I think the match didn't deliver nearly as high as it would have on paper. My number six is a match that I actually had a little higher than you have it, and that's Razor and Diesel from 1994. I love Walter Payton in that crowd. The only bad thing about that match is those butt-ugly Razor Ramon t-shirts. And my friend Gary bought one of those, and I thought it was $20 wasted. It was one of the worst shirts that they ever made. And but that takes nothing away from the awesome crowd. The Chicago crowd was just one of the times where I thought the Chicago crowd was great, and it's a good match. So I have that one at number six.
All right, my number six is Steve Austin and Owen Hart from SummerSlam 97, like you said. Obviously the memorable ending, but I think everyone forgets just how good a match that was. That was like a 4-star match heading into that finish. And if we got the, whatever the planned finish was, it probably would have been even bigger, great on that. So, an excellent, excellent match, probably the best match on that card. Mm. You know, it was kind of the end of the great technical Steve Austin, before he became the brawler Steve Austin. So,
yes. My number five, is probably,
and now this may, I don't know about you, but when you rank these top five, this might have been the five hardest things I've ever ranked.
Yes, I absolutely agree, because I think you're going to think I have this too low. And my number five is Bret and Bulldog from 1992.
Yes,
I do. And that's just because the four matches above it are just so – this was a bitch.
Yeah, this was really hard. All five of these to me are pretty much 1A, you know, 1B, 1C, 1D.
Exactly. So I have it 1E, if you will, and at number five, Bret and Bulldog from 92. Bret deserves a lot of credit because Bulldog was a mess these last 5 minutes. He was just so bloated and blown up.
I think it was the last like 20 minutes, but.
Well, I was being nice, but Bret did a hell of a job keeping him in it, and it makes it a great match. So I have 1992 at number five.
Okay, I probably have the one you probably have higher, and that's from 1998, Triple H and Rock at a ladder match. I know that means probably more to you than a lot of people. I think it's a great match, a great ladder match. But to me, there was always just a little bit something missing from that one. But they definitely went and did what, and they would do this again over the years, what a lot of people maybe thought that they couldn't do at that point, and that is deliver a great gimmick ladder match.
Of course, I do have that one higher. My number four match, and I won't totally go crazy with it because we talked about it last week, and that's Bret and Perfect. Bret Hart, Mr. Perfect from SummerSlam 91. Tremendous match. Could have been better if Perfect was healthy, but that doesn't take away from what it is at face value. Easily one of the five greatest, and definitely belongs here. And it's tough to put it lower than this. And it could be higher depending on your mood, but I have it at number four.
Okay. And, I do have it slightly higher. My number four is from SummerSlam 95, and that is the Razor Ramon Shawn Michaels ladder match. A lot of fans and pundits actually like this one better than the WrestleMania 10 match. I don't, only cause I like the face heel dichotomy at 10 better. The face angle on it kind of takes a little bit away from me, even though technically maybe it's a better match. But still a great match. I mean, yeah, tremendous. The two just beat the shit out of each other with that ladder. They call back to WrestleMania 10 and the finish and everything else. So Shawn, of course, gets his win back and wins the IC title.
I have that one. I agree. I have that one at number three. That's my number three match. And I agree with you. The heel Shawn at the Garden made the match a little better in that aspect from a psychology perspective than this one. This one was just two guys who wanted to try and steal the show again. And they did. You know, for the most part, that was the best thing about that show, except for the opener. And it's just a tremendous match, but it doesn't have that same sizzle that the one at WrestleMania 10 did. I agree with that. Number two.
No, I didn't do my number three.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, I thought you did. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Number three is Bret and Perfect.
Okay.
SummerSlam 91. We just talked about it. So.
Okay. My number two, and you thought I had this at number one. I bet you thought I would. I don't. My number two SummerSlam Intercontinental title match of all time is The Ultimate Warrior and Rick Rude from 1989.
Actually, I have that in the same spot as well.
Okay. We won't get into it. We did it already. It's one of my favorites of all time.
Yes.
Period.
Carried, of course, as well by the Jesse. Tremendous commentary.
Yes, exactly. And my number one, and you probably think I'm being favoritist because the guy's in it, but I still think it's a career-creating match for both of them. And I have Rock and Triple H in the ladder match from 1998. The match made these guys' careers. Got them – to me – the importance of pushing them into the stratosphere made this match even more important than just being for the title. A lot of people thought the ending was dumb with the nut shot by China, all that crap, but it all tied together for me. And the only thing that made it bad was that Triple H really never held it because then he hurt his knee and had to put it up in a tournament anyway. So, kind of ruined it that he didn't really get to defend it. But to me, it's SummerSlam's greatest Intercontinental title match simply for historical purposes.
All right. My number one IC title match is the one you had, obviously, number five, and that's from 1992, Bret and Bulldog. To me,
I had a feeling you had that number one.
You said that Triple H Rock is a star maker. To me, this was the star maker because this proved that Bret Hart was more than just an excellent upper mid-card guy. This proved he could be the man. Going out there in a hostile environment like that, carrying a subpar worker compared to him to a great match, going almost nearly a half an hour with a great storyline behind it, a technical masterpiece with these two guys. And you could tell in this match he handheld Bulldog all the way through and delivered an instant classic. And really, this was the match that basically propelled him to the world title 2 months later. So to me, that is definitely the best IC title match in SummerSlam history.
Okay. Well, again, those five, 92, 91, 95, 89, and 98.
Yeah.
It all depends on what your mood is. But clearly, those are the five greatest IC title matches in SummerSlam history. Some say in WWF history. Of course, you throw in some others. But yeah, for those that try to rank these yourselves, I guarantee you will have these five in your top five in some order. But I have 1998. Justin has 1992.
Okay, let's run through the main events. Now, as you mentioned, we have more main events than we do have SummerSlams. There were a few cards that were we considered a double main event. And to me, when we set this criteria, that meant the show, you didn't really know what match was going to go on last prior to the show. There are some where you have two title matches, some where you have two big matches. But you know, a lot of those, like, say, 2002, you knew Shawn Michaels and Triple H wasn't going to go last. It was Rock Brock. To me, that was the main event. But then you have some like 1990 that were promoted as a double main event. You know, 1990, I mean, I'm sorry, 19, what's the other one I had in my mind?
I don't know.
All right, 2001, that was another one where, you know, it could have gone either way. So, you know, there are a few out there that have, you know, multiple options that could have, you know, been questionable heading in. So we'll talk about it as we go. So,
okay. I have 29 matches total.
Okay.
29. I think I have all the pairs covered because I actually have next to the years that have two matches. I have the match in parentheses. So I'm pretty sure that it's 29 matches.
I think I have 28, but I might have counted wrong. Hang on.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll start. And tell me, you know, we'll see if we miss them. My number 29, which to me is the worst SummerSlam main event of all time, and this is it was the easiest choice for me of the whole.
Yeah,
of
I
every
have 28,
list.
So you got one extra than I do. We'll see when you say it, I'll know. So
okay, the worst match for me, and this is cake, is Diesel Mabel from SummerSlam '95. It's a colossal fat piece of shit, just like Mabel is, and I'm not saying it anymore. I don't need to.
Okay, I actually have a match worse than that one, I think, and that is Undertaker versus Fake Undertaker from 1994. To me, that was clearly the worst SummerSlam main event, and then I have Diesel Mabel next. So to me, those are the two. Bottom of the barrel.
Actually, I have that at 28, too. Taker,
okay.
Faker.
Okay,
so the only reason I probably could have that lower, the Mabel Diesel build was just, you know, I mean, it was just, you know, just par for the course for that whole year. They spent so much time, and this is probably why I think you have it higher. They spent so much time on this storyline with Leslie Nielsen and throwing Raymond Rougeau in the pool. And what they spent, like, what, 2.5 months?
Yeah, it was a
building
lot.
This up, and it ended up being a colossal big dump of shit.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't blame Brian Lee for this. It's not his fault. So he doesn't look like Taker. Who the hell does? You know? I mean, he did the best he could. So I don't blame him.
Is it a primetime Brian Lee?
Is it primetime? I guess there's only one Flying Brian.
Yes.
Yellow Dog. Anyway, Brian Lee doesn't deserve the blame for this. He did the best he could. He was told to do something. He did the best he could, and it ended up being a big piece of shit. So
right.
I agree. I have that too.
All right. So next for me was the match we just talked about in our last vault, and that's Hogan, a Warrior against Slaughter, Adnan, and Mustafa. We bitched enough about that last week, so I'm all set.
I have that one. Oh, no, I don't have that one that much higher. At 27, I have the Elimination Chamber from 2003. I know the Goldberg thing is great, but the reason he didn't win is the reason I have it so low. It was easy bookings. I don't care that Triple H is. This is the only time in that whole 2003, and we've been on many message boards. I've defended this to the hilt. I've gotten crap thrown at me on the internet superhighway or whatever, but this is the one time during the whole run that I blame Triple H. If your groin was that much of a mess, then he should have let himself get squashed in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that. It was cake. A monkey could have booked this chamber, and they found a way to screw it up.
All right.
So
actually, surprisingly, have that a little higher.
Okay.
Next up, I had Hogan and Savage against DiBiase and Andre, Mega Powers, Mega Bucks. Yeah, fun match, memorable match, but to me it was just basically a house show main event in the end.
I actually have that considerably higher.
I figured you
actually
would.
I considerably higher. My next match.
I probably underranked that one a little bit, honestly.
I actually this next match you just mentioned, so I only have it slightly higher, and that's Triangle of Terror against Hogan and Warrior from 1991. We won't get into it. We talked about it last week. So.
Okay. My next one is another one I probably may have a little bit too low, considering what I think overall of the show, and that's Hogan and Beefcake against Zeus and Savage. The atmosphere is fun. The build was great. The commentary is great. But to me, the match is just kind of blah because due to Zeus. You know, I'm sure I gushed over it when we did the actual review. But when you have to rank these in order, to me, you got to be fair. And nostalgia has to play a role, but not an overly high role. So that's why I have this probably a little bit lower than it should be.
Okay. I have it higher. My next match, which I have at 25, that is one half of SummerSlam 90, and that is Hogan against Earthquake. The match itself is not great. The crowd kind of carries it. The tension and the drama and the backstory of Hogan coming back from the injuries. But the match itself really isn't that good. Okay, so
I had that next. Okay. I like that match. Obviously, we talked about it. I love the atmosphere. I like the welts that he leaves on Earthquake's back. Maybe I have that, again, a little high maybe compared to the ones I just said before it. But those three to me are pretty interchangeable, honestly. 88, 89, 90.
Okay. My next match, which I have at number 24, and that is Lex Luger and Yokozuna from 1993. The match itself, I actually don't dislike, but the ending was dumb. I would have just had Luger win. I don't know what the hell the big deal was. But whatever. The crowd was hot. The match isn't unwatchable. Their match at 10, at WrestleMania 10, is much worse. The ending just pisses me off here. It just ruined everything. Yeah. Hey, look, everybody, let's blow balloons in the air. He won by count out. I mean, what? It's just dumb. So I have that low just because that ending is hideous.
All right. My next one is the Elimination Chamber from 2003. I really only have it higher than those other matches just due to that awesome stretch of Goldberg where he just runs through everyone, kicks the fucking plexiglass, spears Jericho through the other plexiglass. And that whole little section was just a tremendous piece of booking until they destroyed it all at the end with that stupid ending. So maybe, again, a little bit too high, but I just really love that whole stretch.
No, I would have had it higher if the ending... See, the ending, you're a little bit better than me in thinking this way. The ending ruins it for me. You see beside the ending. So that's the only differences we have in that one. My next one, which is for me number 23, is one half of SummerSlam 2009, and that's John Cena against Randy Orton. Good match. Nondescript. I mean, they've met multiple times on pay-per-view. I don't totally remember this one as well as I should. I remember being okay. I don't remember being great. But I have that one at number 23.
Okay, here I have Ultimate Warrior Rick Rude from 1990 inside the steel cage. World title is on the line. Obviously, they couldn't recapture the magic of 89. Kind of a blander main event, but still solid enough just because of who was involved and the fact that it was inside a cage.
I have that one slightly higher, but not that much higher. My next one, number 22, is SummerSlam 2007, which is also John Cena and Randy Orton. So I pretty much have those two matches back to back. To me, they're the same matches. 2007, is that the one where the build where... Or Orton punts Cena's dad. Was that 07 or was that 09?
That was 07, I think.
Okay, maybe that's why I like that one a little bit more, because I thought that was cool. I like that.
Okay, you know what? I didn't rank... I think 09... What's the one that wasn't last, 09? Yeah, that was Punk Hardy was last.
Punk Hardy was last.
I didn't rank the 09 one, because to me, that the feud wasn't as intense going in 07. And
right.
To me, that was the one that was really... Punk Hardy was clearly going to be the main event since
the
TLC match. So that was the only one I didn't really count. So that's where the missing one is.
All right. You would put that when we did the prerequisites. You would put that down. So that's why I added that match. But all right. So at number 21. So now we're even. You could put Cena Orton at the bottom for you. So number 21 for me, the main event, SummerSlam 2005, Hulk Hogan, Shawn Michaels. You probably have this higher, much higher. The match is not great. I mean, it's okay. It's entertaining, but Hogan just does nothing here. He brings nothing to the table. Shawn pretty much picks him up, puts him on his shoulder, and carries him through 20 minutes. He's a big lump of crap. He gets his win in the end, and Shawn has to earn the last, the first 19 minutes, and then Hogan gets to win in the last 2 minutes. So that pisses me off. So that's why I have that match lower than you probably do, because for a match with such a great build and such a high profile, Hogan could have brought more to this, and he didn't. So that's my take on that one. I have that one at 21.
Okay. Next up, I have Lex Luger Yokozuna from 93. Surprisingly, a very good match compared to what was expected. Stu Wise worked really hard. There's a lot of heat. Outside, of course, the ending was pretty stupid in the long run. But to me, when you actually watch that match, I think I have to give them extra credit just for how hard they worked and for how surprising it ended up being.
Okay. We are now in the top 20. At number 20 for me, from SummerSlam 2001, Rock and Booker T. I actually like the weird handicap with Shane the following month better than this. But this isn't a terrible match. It's good. I think the chemistry is not exactly there. The two never met each other in the ring. So, you know, I think that hurts it a little bit. But it was very entertaining. Crowd was hot. But I have that at number 20.
Okay. My number 19 is Cena and Orton from 2007. Like we said, we like the build. Those two guys usually have pretty good chemistry. And this was the surprising one, right? Where, was that 2007? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a surprising one where they had the, oh no, okay. That's where Cena won clean. I'm thinking of the next one where they had the reverse DQ, but, yeah, I like that. I like that match. Solid match, really good angle coming in. And of course the split crowd as well. So,
My number 19 is one you already mentioned, and that is Hogan Beefcake versus Savage and Zeus from SummerSlam 89. As much as I love that show, this match is underwhelming, probably because Zeus is a big fucking paperweight. But extra points because Beefer brings it too. So, but this match is a good but not great. So okay. I have that at 19.
My 18 is from 1999, Steve Austin, Triple H, and Mankind. Highlight to me was Jesse Ventura's referee. I kind of didn't like all the political stuff going on around this match where, you know, all the rumors circulating where Austin didn't want to put over Triple H and they had Mankind win. And the whole fact that Mankind probably only won just so Jesse could raise the hand of a face and then he transitioned the next night and all the fucking build up where they changed this match, you know, 100 million times in the 2 weeks leading up to the show. To me, it was a little underwhelming for the three big Attitude Era stars being in the ring at once. You know, Jesse kind of, as good as he was, he almost even overshadowed the match itself. So
I actually have that match a lot higher. My number 18 is one you already mentioned, and that's Warrior and Rude from 1990. Good cage match. You know, Warrior won. He had nothing else to do, so no other opponents. And the Philly crowd gave him a good pop at the end. So I have that one at number 18.
Okay. My number 17 is John Cena Edge from 2006.
That's what I have it there, too.
Okay. Yeah, good match. Boston crowd was hot and into it. Of course, split. And a surprising ending, because, of course, you assume Cena was going to win in his hometown, but Edge ends up stealing the win. So, memorable match and a good match.
On a side note, was there ever a better opportunity? You had a great feud between two guys, and the two consecutive pay-per-views would each be in their hometowns.
Yep.
Isn't that crazy?
Probably funny.
Obviously, Unforgiven the following month was in, and the guys won each. It's like they each won road games. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, basically.
It's pretty funny. At number 16, okay, so go ahead. I already did my 17, so you're number 16.
My number 16 is Rock and Booker from 2001. Okay. This was kind of a dream match for fans of this time because you know guys that kind of were similar style, similar build, same finisher, kind of the standard bearers of their promotions in 2000. You know, regardless of how bad WCW was, Booker was kind of seen as the top face that year. So honestly, I think at this point it was almost like, I don't say a big time dream match, but one of those like what if matches that was always kind of floating around. So
right.
I was always surprised that actually it main evented that year. I thought the other match we'll get to in a minute would have. Mm-hmm. But you know, I like the style that those two have. I actually agree with you. I like the one the next month as well. So
for me, the next my number 16 match, you probably have this a lot higher. And that is the other half from 2003, Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar. Great match. I like their match at 19 better, but this match is very good. And obviously they would have an awesome match in September on TV. But I like this one. I like this one a lot. And it actually makes that show a little better than it could have been considering you know, the crappy ending of the show itself. So I like that one at number 16.
Okay. I actually don't have it too much higher. My number 15 is from last year, and that's John Cena, Bret Hart, Edge, Chris Jericho, John Morrison, R-Truth, and Daniel Bryan versus The Nexus. I like the whole thing with Daniel Bryan, his surprise return after being fired. It was cool seeing Bret Hart involved, even though he didn't do much. And the match itself was pretty awesome until the end, just totally, totally screwed everything up, where Cena no-sells the DDT on the concrete, gets up, and then just ends up winning the match. And to me, the fact that I ranked this low is because it really sealed The Nexus. You know, they had been shit on a little bit leading up to the show, but this was their chance to kind of rejuvenate the group. They should have had them win this match without a doubt. And Cena did not need the win, and he kind of made Nexus look like bitches after this. So,
I actually have that match a little higher. My number 15 match, you probably have this a lot higher, and that is Brock and Rock from 2002. This match on paper probably should have been lower because you'd think these two have nothing to do with each other.
I cannot believe you have this low.
And I have some other stuff a little higher. So there's one match that I have higher that you probably think I'm crazy, but that's okay. That's what makes these shows great. I think this match is great, but there's others that I like better. There's one match that I have higher that you're probably going to think I'm insane, but I have this match at number 15.
Okay. My number 14 is the one you just talked about, 2003, Kurt and Brock. Yes, definitely a step back from WrestleMania 19. It hurts here that they're both... actually, no, Brock had turned heel at this point, right?
Yes, yeah, okay, he did.
So he was the heel. You know, Vince at ringside takes away from a lot of it, his whole antics, stomping around and making faces and getting involved. And then he takes the unnecessary Angle slam on the chair just for the fucking shits and giggles. Angle wins clean, surprisingly enough, as well. So good match, very good match, but not as great as you would expect from those two guys.
Right. My number 14, as you already mentioned, you're going to think I'm nuts, but that's last year's WWE versus Nexus. I just love the match. I like Skip Sheffield. I like Tarver. I miss those guys, believe it or not. And take away from the end, which was, yes, extremely annoying. The first 30-something minutes was a lot of fun. So I have a soft spot for that match at number 14.
Okay. My number 13 is from 1996, Shawn Michaels and Vader.
I have that match, too.
Okay, yeah, you know, I love this match a lot. I wish it was a little bit better. I don't really care for all the false finishes in the middle. But these guys work well together, as you would expect. Shawn in his prime of his first run. And, of course, Vader before they really beat him down mentally. This was pretty much his peak as a monster in the WWF.
Yes.
So he probably should have went over here, but didn't.
Yeah.
But still a very good match.
I agree. And Shawn was – this was one of his, you know, temper tantrum bitch fests in the middle that took away from it as well, too. So. You're up now since I passed mine. So that's my number 13. So
right,
we are at number 12.
My number 12 is from 2000, Rock, Triple H, Kurt Angle. A lot of heat coming to this in the midst of the whole Stephanie storyline. Rock almost felt like an extra piece to this, though. Honestly, you know, these two guys both wanted the title, but they kind of were more at each other's throats, but they were being forced to work together. Of course, the match ends up getting a monkey wrench thrown in it because Kurt gets pedigreed. Is it the pedigree that knocks him out or the rock bottom?
No, it's the pedigree. Well, he
on the table, right?
Well, it's not even a pedigree. Triple H doesn't even get a chance to jump. He lifts up and then the table just falls apart Kurt's face hits the cement.
Yes, so and Kurt knocks himself loopy and he has to leave and then come back and he's out of it. So that kind of, to me, hurt the match a little bit. And Rock gets the surprising... I thought it was kind of a surprising win that Rock won clean there, honestly. The way they were trading the title back and forth that year.
Mm. My number 12 is a match you have not mentioned yet, so you must really like it. Unless I... no, I don't think you mentioned it yet. And that's Randy Orton and Chris Benoit from SummerSlam 2004. Really good match. The crowd chanting for Orton... And then the reason why I hate this Toronto crowd because they kind of fucked him in the end because the writers listened to this crowd cheering for Orton and then they ended up screwing him in the end anyway. So, but the match itself I like a lot. I think Orton did a good job. Benoit was on a roll that year, of course, and I think Orton did a good job of keeping up with him. So that's why I have that one at number 12.
All right, my number 11 is Shawn Michaels and Hulk Hogan from 2005. Dream match of all dream matches, really. Kind of came out of nowhere in the summer, but the build to this was fantastic, thanks all to Shawn. Yeah, Shawn's pinball selling is ridiculous, but to me, I don't know. It made the match memorable. And maybe I have it a little high because now I'm thinking about how pissed off I am about the Hogan thing, how he barely wrestles and then he barely has any offense and he hits the big boot and dances around for 10 minutes while Shawn lays there. But
yep.
To me, it was a memorable main event, a big-time main event, a big-name main event. So maybe a little high, but I always enjoy watching it.
Okay. My number – what are we on? Number 11, and that is Undertaker and Edge, Hell in a Cell from 2008. Obviously, everyone knows how I feel about Edge and how I feel about Hell in a Cell, so it worked perfectly. And the dramatics at the end with the hole and the choke slam through it and the fire, and I just think that's cool. I've always enjoyed all those kind of histrionics when they fit. Sometimes they don't, but in this case they did. So that's why I have this one at number 11.
Okay. My number 10. One second, I lost it. Okay, number 10, I have CM Punk and Jeff Hardy, TLC from 2009. This was really Punk's ascension to being the top heel that we know him to be today. Really kicking in with the whole straight edge stuff, picking on Jeff Hardy. And Jeff Hardy puts over Punk on his way out the door. Punk wins the title in the TLC. Or he had the title already, right? He defends it here. That was a good feud they had going on over that summer on SmackDown over the whole straight-edge drug user Jeff Hardy stuff. And this match was an excellent way to cap off that show.
Mm-hmm. I actually have that slightly higher. My number 10, you're going to think I'm probably bonkers for having it this high. Maybe it's just the historical purposes, and I always have soft spots for the older shows. But I have the Mega Bucks versus the Mega Powers from 1988 here. I know the match isn't the greatest, but I love the build. I love Jesse as the ref. I even can turn past the absolutely unlistenable garbled nonsense of Superstar Billy Graham at commentary.
Well, you know, brother.
He's got a dude going in there, and brother, they got to come back. What did they write it for him? Anyway, taking that out of it, I just love the match. Crowd's hot, you know, Elizabeth ripping her. And, you know, that was very, very cutting edge at the time, Elizabeth ripping her dress off in the little skivvies. Mm-hmm. That was pretty cutting edge for 1988 standards, so I have that one at number 10.
All right, my number 9 is Undertaker Edge, Hell in a Cell, which you just mentioned. Great match, great Hell in a Cell, capped off their really good feud from that year. And I enjoy the stuff at the end, too, where he chokes Sam's Edge straight to hell, pretty much. Mm.
Okay, number 8. No, number... No, we're at number 9. Number 9 is... I have... I didn't really think about it until you said it earlier, but my number 9 is Rock.
No, that should be your number 8. This should be your 8.
Oh, okay, my number 8.
No, I'm sorry. No.
You're right. It is number 9. Yeah, yeah. My number 9 is Rock, Angle, and Triple H from 2000. I didn't think the... I kind of like the whole Rock as the... You know, laughing at the two of them as idiots, arguing over Stephanie while he was the champion, and then just kind of use their idiocy to take advantage of it and get the win. I didn't have a problem with it. Obviously, and I also give a lot of props to two guys who no one ever thought at the time, you know, could do what they did, and that's improvise. Rock and Triple H did a good job of keeping that match going with Kurt knocked into next Christmas. And then, yeah, the end was a little hokey with, you know, him carrying Stephanie off, but I had no problem with it. I like this match. I have it at number 9.
All right, my number 8 is 1997, Bret Hart and The Undertaker. The whole stuff with Shawn Michaels as a guest referee in the midst of the Hart Foundation angle. Bret wins his 5th title. Of course, the great chair shot and the spit at the end. Very good match. Not as good as their match at One Night Only, but a very good match between these two guys that really needed to deliver a good match based on their history together.
Mm-hmm. I actually have that higher. My number 8 is a match that I know you probably have very high, although I don't have it low, but I bet you definitely have it obviously higher than I do. And that's from 1992, Randy Savage and the Ultimate Warrior. I know you love this match, and I do too. You know, I wanted, knowing that Warrior could have turned heel, which probably would have been a fascinating, oops, sorry, my mic fell there, which would have been a fascinating dynamic, having Warrior as a heel champion would have been kind of cool. I don't know what that would have done for Bret's title win a couple months later, but... that would have been interesting, but that would have made the match higher for me if that was the ending. But the match itself, I like a lot. I thought these two had good chemistry together. We know that already from their match at WrestleMania 7, but this is just as good. So I have this one at number 8.
All right, my number 7 is from 2004, Chris Benoit, Randy Orton. Excellent match. Of course, the match the next night was even better, but this really made Orton into a star. He had been having a really good 2004, but Benoit really put him over strong. Benoit's title run ended a little prematurely there, and Orton, of course, would be rushed into being the main babyface, which is really unnecessary, but the match itself is really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my number 7 match is a match that you had very low, and that is Stone Cold, Triple H, and Mankind from 1999. Mm-hmm. I thought the crowd was great. I thought Jesse was good. The backstage stuff didn't faze me, even though it is my guy that was probably screwed, but that doesn't bother me. He won it the next night, and I could look past that.
I think that's why I don't like it, though.
What?
Because he won it the next night.
Oh,
instead of just winning it there.
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought the match itself was good, and yeah, hey, you know, it's Stone Cold in the end never got any shit for it, so maybe who knows if it's even true, but I don't know. I have nothing against the match itself. I like Jesse. I like when he what does he say to Shane? Something about tell your father you're a sick, stupid little bastard. Or,
no, that one's for your father, you silly bastard.
You silly,
like that.
Yeah, stupid bastard or something like that. Yeah, I don't know. I like that match. I have a soft spot. I like it, and I know the backstage stuff is known to kind of ruin it, but it does ruin it for me. It's one of my more favorite triple threats.
Okay, my number 6 is the one you just talked about, Warrior Savage from 92. Love that match. Love that whole storyline with Perfect and Flair playing the mind games. Those two guys have great chemistry and brought back. You know, brought back memories of WrestleMania 7, just a different style, much more hard-hitting this time around. And of course, there's really Savage's. I love that title reign because Hogan's not in the picture and he gets to be his own, you know, be on top of the promotion by himself for that summer. So, really cool match. I like that. Plus, the arena and the crowd is great.
Yes. My number, what are we at? Number 6. No, 6.
Yeah, number 6, yep.
Oh, I thought you said 5, sorry. My number 6 is a match you already mentioned, and that's Punk and Hardy from 2009. Punk was finally hitting his stride as a heel. He had just turned heel a few months before, and we were all very happy for that. And of course, look where he got it. Look where it got us now. And Jeff threw himself all over the place. One of the best. I have to watch this match again. It's been a while, but I do remember liking it a lot, and that's why I have it at number six.
Okay, my number five is from 1994. That's Bret Hart and Owen Hart in a cage match.
I have it there as well.
A really fun match, a different style cage match where these guys weren't out to maim each other. They were just wanted to win. Owen wanted to escape the cage. That was his goal. He wanted to take his brother's title. He wasn't looking to bloody his brother or beat his brother. He had already beaten him once. He just wanted that title. So the whole match is him trying to escape and Bret trying to stop him. And then you have the awesome stuff in the aftermath, of course, where the Anvil takes out Bulldog at ringside and then hops in the cage and they're beating the crap out of Bret. And the family's climbing the cage trying to get in to save him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And just like, you know, Wild Horseman classic NWA Stampede level stuff.
Yeah.
So a lot of cool stuff there.
You made a good point on our, and I remember the great wording you put in your comments on our written review of that show, that if that play, that show took place at the Saddle Dome, the friggin' crowd would have been beside themselves. I think they would have jumped out of their seats. I think it would have been ridiculous. My number, okay, so that's also my number five, is Bret and Owen from 1994. So now your number four
is from 1998, probably the match that you have higher, and that's Steve Austin and The Undertaker. Excellent match, despite both guys being pretty banged up. You had all the stuff with Kane, where Taker and Kane working together. Was Taker a face or heel? Austin wanted to know whose side he was on and were they going to play fair. And of course, Kane comes out but doesn't really get involved. You know, excellent match to cap off a great show.
Mm-hmm. My number four is one that I know you obviously have higher, and that's Kurt Angle and Stone Cold from 2001. It's just such a sick, fucking nutso, off the charts, crazy mess.
Yes.
In a fun way. Refs getting hit. JR and Paul's commentating for this match is awesome.
Yep.
Kurt was just – this was like one of Kurt's best babyface matches.
Oh, yeah, easy.
And Steve was on a roll. It was just overall just a great, great match. Great match.
My number three is Brock and Rock from 02. Awesome match. I love the crowd heat. Rock puts Brock over clean. This is the match that really made Brock a true star. Unfortunately, we know what he'd do, but he'd have a very good run with the title. I mean, it's not act like he pissed it away the next week. And that Long Island crowd was tremendous here. So I always loved that match, and it capped off a great show.
My number three match is one you already mentioned, and that is Bret Hart and Taker from 1997. Love that match. A little long, but it doesn't bother me. And then, of course, that vision of Bret's spittle hanging off Sean's lip, and then he paced Taker with the chair, and he has that look like, ah, shit. Mm-hmm. I love that response. And then he has to do the pin, and then he walks off, and he looks at Taker like, I am so fucked. All the visuals in the last, 10 minutes of that match are awesome. And the crowd, that Meadowlands crowd is all over the place, and definitely one of the best best main events of all time.
All right, my number two is Steve Austin, Kurt Angle from 2001.
Okay.
Love that match. Love the whole feud, the whole build-up. Like you said, it's probably Angle's best match as a face. Those two guys, I mean, that's the match that maybe you could say actually ended up ending Steve Austin's career because they really just beat the crap out of each other. They suplexed the crap out of each other. Both men, bloody messes. Yeah. And that one spot where Austin is a smacking Kurt's head off the post on the outside is so vicious.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yep.
And really, to me, this was... I'm not a huge fan of fuck finishes, but to me, the DQ here made sense because Austin was so desperate to save his title. That was the whole storyline. And he knew he could not beat Kurt Angle, so he ended up getting himself disqualified, and it led to the next month. So I love that match. It's awesome.
Yes. So that is your number two. My number two is probably your number one, and that is Bret and Bulldog from 1992. Great ending to that show, obviously. The only time ever that the Intercontinental title is last, other than some WrestleMania 6, but that doesn't really count because the world title was involved too. I've already talked about what I love about the match. Mm-hmm. It's definitely one of the greatest of all time.
Yep, and that's definitely my number one as well. So,
okay. And obviously, my number one, and it's no secret to anybody, the greatest main event in for me in SummerSlam history is Steve Austin and Taker from SummerSlam 98. It was a perfect main event. Love the build. And then Taker... Just to kind of clarify what you were saying, Taker actually doesn't even let Kane. Kane walks halfway up that nice little ramp, and Taker shoos him off.
Yep.
So, Taker hadn't totally turned heel yet. We'd see that in a few months after that. But I just love that match. Love the build. Loved hearing Highway to Hell a million times. I love that match. And it caps off that show for me, which we'll obviously get to next.
Yep.
So your number...
Yep.
I was about to just to clarify, your number one main event of all time, Bret and Bulldog from 1992. Mine is Austin and Taker from 1998.
Yep. So that was the first time we We differed on a number one.
So. Yes, but we weren't off by much. All right, so where'd you have 98? You had 98 what? At the top five, right?
Number four, yep.
Number four, okay.
All right, let's quickly do our top 10 performance. I'll read my top 10, you read your top 10, then we'll move on to the shows and wrap this up.
Yep.
My top 10 in no order: Rey Mysterio, Kurt Angle, The Rock, Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho, Steve Austin, Owen Hart, Ultimate Warrior, Bret Hart, and Shawn Michaels. To me, those are the top 10 SummerSlam based on match quality, memorable matches, SummerSlam performers.
Okay. I actually ranked mine, so okay. I'll put mine on numbers. I have some different guys than you do. For me, number 10, Mick Foley. Number 9, Hulk Hogan. Number 8, Kurt Angle. Number 7, Steve Austin. Number 6, Triple H. Number 5, Shawn Michaels. Number 4, Bret Hart. Number 3, Ultimate Warrior. Number 2, Rock. And number 1, Edge.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't have Edge on my list, but yeah, I guess you could definitely count him.
I mean, has he ever really had a bad SummerSlam match? Really not. I mean, no. Go back. I mean, 98 was his first match, but 99, he fought, I don't remember who he was at that in 99.
He was 2000. Didn't they have like a turmoil, I think, in 99?
That's right, yep. 2000, the TLC. 2001, he fought Lance Storm. 2002, he fought Eddie. 2003, he wasn't at. 04 was the triple threat, and on down the line, the guy's never had a bad, in my opinion, the guy's never had a bad SummerSlam match.
Maybe so. Looking back, I may knock Jericho off the list and put him on there, but I stand by the rest of my other nine. Okay, let's wrap this up by going through the order of our SummerSlam. So now, how many other total?
23.
Okay, so 23. All right, so I'll say mine, you say yours, and I think we've pretty much talked about why we like all these, so let's just kind of buzz through this.
Okay.
All right, number 23, I have the first one, 1988.
I have 2003.
Okay. Then I have 2010, last year's show.
2006.
Okay, then I have 2007.
1995.
2003. 2004. Let's see here.
Okay. We're at number 19.
19, I have 1990.
2010.
Okay, then I have 95.
And then I have 1990.
Hey, Hacksaw, have you seen Sapphire Baby?
No, no, I haven't, Dust, but we're all still looking for her.
Okay, then I have...
I knew you couldn't go the whole show. I was waiting for... I did my best to give you no opportunities whatsoever, and you ended up finding one, I guess so. Because he all wasn't right. Any matches, thank God, that are on true. This list. But all right, so number 17.
2004.
2005.
Right. Then I have 2006.
2007.
1996.
That's where I have 96. Number 15.
Okay. Number 14 checks it with 1993.
2008.
2008, right after that.
And I have 1993. So we have those flip-flopped. Okay.
1999.
All right. That's number 12. I have 2001.
A little low for that, I thought. 2005 I have next.
I have 1994.
That's where I have next, 1994.
That's number 10. I have 2009.
Okay. I have 2009 at number 9.
At number 9, I have 1997.
That's where I have as well. Next.
Okay. At number 8, I have 1992.
I have 2000.
Okay. At number 7, 1988.
2001.
Okay. Number 6, 1999.
Okay. So my number 5, because I went first, right? All right. So here's the top 5 then, right?
Okay.
So I have 2001 at number 6. That was one I really went back and forth with, 2001. I had a hard time figuring out where to put that. I had it in my top 5 originally, actually, and then I dropped it as I rearranged.
Yeah, well, I the thing for me was, because I took our actual letter grades from our reviews, except obviously for 07 through 10, which we didn't do yet. So I have A's, B's, and C's. And 2001 was in the clump of B's, and it was tough to do that. I look back, and maybe my only regret is I would flip-flop 2001 and 1994. I think 2001 may be a better show than 94. So.
Oh, definitely, I think. So.
Yeah.
All right, top five. Here we go. Number 5, 1998. You can probably screw me for that one.
I am. 2000.
Okay. Number 4, 1991.
I have 1991 also.
I had a hard time with these. This is almost like the IC matches. These top five to me could go anywhere.
They are. For me, 2 and 3. Number 1 was unequivocal. 2 and 3 were the tough ones.
Okay. Number 3, I have 1992.
I have 2002.
Okay. Number 2, I have 2002.
I have 1989.
Oh, wow. So number 1, I have 1989. I thought for sure you were going to have 89 number 1.
Nope. No, I thought about it, and I looked, and I looked, and I looked, and I just couldn't do it. I think I just love more matches on the, on my number one. And of course, my number one is 1998.
To me, it is
the show that.
So now, what did you have 92?
I had 1992 at 8.
Okay.
Number 8. I don't know, like Taker Kamala. There's a lot of there's more holes in that show.
I just
show
could not get over how much I loved Brett Bulldog and Savage Warrior. To me, and the atmosphere just completely bumps that. Maybe I overrank it, but to me, that's like your 98 is my 92. That's
okay. And for me, when you look at, for me, 1998, 1989, and 2002, those three shows I could throw in at any time. But I just, I can't think of one moment in 1998 that I dislike. Mm-hmm. Even that Oddities Kai and Tai clusterfuck, I laugh my ass off every time I watch it. There's just not one. Even X-Pac Jarrett, the hair versus hair match. Mm-hmm. Just nothing on that show bothers me. All right, the tag team match a little bit, but not enough for me to not make it number one. Everything else about that show was great.
Yeah, and it's, like you said, those top few. And to me, the SummerSlams, you break them into tiers. To me, those top six, counting 2001, are mm-hmm. clearly a cut above the rest. And mm-hmm. those are the six I had a really hard time putting into any kind of order. So
So
there you have it. Those are our SummerSlam Listomania. We hope you enjoyed that. We don't really have any feedback this week, but we want you to leave feedback about this show. Mm-hmm. Compare your list, break your list down on the Facebook page, on the message board, Bigelow34ProBoards.com, mm-hmm. or at Graham's page, the History of WWE Facebook page as well. So one last thing we wanted to do, though, is our buddy Graham's friend, Jackie Feist.
Yes.
She is starting her own podcast as well, affiliated with Graham, and she asked us to read this press release she wrote up. Mm-hmm. So, from the History of WWE.com presents Triple Talk Wrestling Radio, debuting Thursday, August 11th. So, it's this week, this Thursday.
Yep.
Pro Wrestling fan site, History of WWE.com, is proud to present Triple Talk Wrestling Radio on Thursday, August 11th. The show will be hosted by pro wrestling, political, and video game podcaster Jackie Feist, and co-hosted by WWE history buff Teddy Prentice, an OWW radio host and veteran wrestling journalist Alan Wojcik. I'm very excited to this new endeavor with the History of WWE website, says Wojcik. It will be fun to meet in, a new audience that's hungry for three different opinions. I think Jackie and Teddy are going to have fun, and I am just along for the ride. I'm excited to finally be hosting my own podcast, says Feist. I've been a recurring guest on several podcasts, but I've never had my own. To be a female hosting a sports entertainment podcast is unique in and of itself, and I'm very excited. The show, originally scheduled to debut the morning of SummerSlam 2011, came together so well and so quickly, it will now debut Thursday, August 11th. The show is hosted exclusively at thehistoryofwwe.com. We'll start with an intro to the host and go into a preview of the upcoming pay-per-view. Any questions can be posted to the show host, Jackie Feist, at jackiefeist@gmail.com, and a commercial for the event can be found, and there's a YouTube link. We can throw that up on our Facebook page. So I hope I'm pronouncing Jackie's last name, and I apologize. If I am not, I don't think it would be Feist. I think it's Feist. So Miss Jackie Feist will be hosting Triple Talk Wrestling Radio. So definitely check that out. I'm sure it's going to be great if Graham's behind it. He's definitely helped propel us.
Yes.
And I just told Jackie we'd love to have her on once we get a show that isn't as jam-packed as this one is. So there you go. We've already run pretty long, so we're going to start wrapping things up. Hope you enjoyed our SummerSlam Listomania. Hope it got you in the mood for this weekend SummerSlam. We will be back, of course, on either tomorrow or, well, it'll probably be posted later in the week. We may be taping it tomorrow, but that'll be, of course, Survivor Series 91 Vintage Vault. And from there, we're going to also maybe be back Friday. We're going to see with a little special treat for you previewing this year's SummerSlam. So we'll see how that goes if we have time to squeeze that in for you. And, of course, next Monday is our big interview with Stevie Richards. Please get your questions in if you haven't yet on the Facebook page, on the message board, on the email, however you want. Thank you always for listening. And Scott, anything else you got to say before we wrap up?
No. Maybe later in the week, as you mentioned, we might do a quickie little SummerSlam preview picks as the week progresses and more matches are added. So stay tuned for that too.
Yep. So there you have it. From my PIC, Scott Criscolo, I'm Jess Rosero. We will talk to you next time from inside the Vintage Vault.
Peace.
Oh, man.